to the Wollongong Local Planning Panel. My name is Alison McCabe and I'm the chair of the panel tonight. I would like to begin by acknowledging the traditional custodians of this land and pay our respect to their elders past and present. I'd just like to introduce the members of the panel. To my immediate left is Steve Layman, to my immediate right is Sue Hobley, and my far right is Bernard Hibbard. I'd just like to acknowledge that there's no apologies for this panel meeting today and just ask if we've got any declarations of interest.
No.
Great. Thank you. Just so you know, our responsibility today is to consider the material presented in front of us in an unbiased and transparent way and to make decisions in accordance with our responsibilities under the relevant planning framework. Relevant to the applications at hand. So just a few procedural matters. If there are any mobile phones, can we actually just make sure they're turned off or turned to silent? The panel meetings are recorded and the recordings are uploaded generally to Council's website within 3 or 4 days of the meeting. So this means that there's recording of personal information and everything you say to us is actually on record. So it's important that you be clear in terms of what you're saying to us, but we also, it's important that you're not disrespectful of either the applications, the applicants, or people in the audience, or anybody to do with the applications. The way we operate is that we would generally give people who have registered to speak about 5 minutes to speak, and then we would then ask the applicant to come out and speak to us on their matter. I have a list of people who have registered. I will ask at the end of that whether there's anybody else in the audience who wishes to speak. I'll probably ask that once or twice, and then once that's done, I won't be asking again, so just be alert for that request. I do ask that we all observe basic common courtesy and that we don't interrupt people when they're speaking. It's important that there's no comments made during presentations, please refrain from making any inappropriate comments or reflections against any persons either here or not at the meeting. It's important to understand that we're not entering into a debate. Our role is to make decisions and the presentations should actually be directed to the panel. We're interested in understanding the facts and the issues, so we'll probably actually ask you some questions. It's very important. We're just not interested in the personalities or what's gone on. We are actually interested in the application and the issues with the applications. So the way we'll do it is we've got two items on the agenda. The first item is for a review of determination of an application at 19 to 21 Kembla Street, Wollongong, for some changes to an approved residential flat building. That application is an application for review of a determination of from council officers that actually refused the modification to that application. The panel in this instance is not the determining authority. Council has sent this application to council to the panel for advice, because this isn't one of the types of applications that would actually normally come up to the council. Up to the panel. So in that case, we will be providing only advice, and then the actual determination will be something that the council officers will do. The second matter is for the change of use to the premises at 4 Auburn Street, Wollongong, for a drug and alcohol rehabilitation centre. And in that application, the local planning panel is the determination authority, so we will actually seek to be making a decision on that application. You'll see us, as I said, taking notes and probably asking questions. The way this panel operates is that we will be hearing from everybody associated with the application, and then we'll hear from, as I said, the applicant, then we'll move on to the next application, and at the end of the meeting, we will actually close the meeting for our decision, and our decision will then be posted on the website for our consideration of the issues, and then will then be posted on the website, again, usually within two or three days of the meeting. So we'll actually close the meeting and tell you can all go home for dinner. So with that, what I'd like to do is we're going to deal with item one, which is the application for review of the refusal of the modification to the residential flat building at 19 to 21 Kembla Street. Probably just generally, just for the audience, the panel has been to all of the sites. We've actually got copies of the submissions, so we've actually had the opportunity to read the submissions and read the report. So on this matter, at the moment I've got three people registered, Anthony Solera, Michael Manti and David Jolly, to speak, and I'm understanding that they're all people speaking on behalf of the applicant. So here's the first call out. Is there anyone in the audience who has come to hear this matter and hasn't had a chance to register, or doesn't matter whether you have, or who would like to speak about this matter? No? No one here worried about Kembla, 19 to 21 Kembla Street? Okay, last call. Okay, in that case, Anthony, Michael and David, do you just want to sort out between yourselves how you want to?
Thank you, panel. At the outset, the applicant acknowledges that he failed to follow due process in not obtaining development consent before constructing those parts of the building that weren't covered by the existing development consent. However, those changes weren't motivated by financial gain. They were motivated by a desire to comply with the Building Code of Australia. I would encourage the panel to consider the outcome that's sought to be achieved by refusal of this application, which I assume is to ensure that the building is built in accordance with the development consent, or the consent is amended in appropriate circumstances where the changes would have been given approval had they been applied for. And I'd encourage the panel to consider whether refusal of the application is the best way to achieve that outcome, and whether the outcome can be achieved, in fact, by approval of the application subject to conditions. From where the applicant sits, the outcome won't be achieved by refusal of the application. That outcome that I've just described won't be achieved by refusal of the application. What will be achieved by refusal of the application from where the applicant sits is that the applicant will never be able to obtain an occupation certificate for those 16 units, while ever the building's in its current form. Those 16 units, which cost about $7.5 million to purchase, will remain vacant for at least 12 months and be vandalised in the course of that period. Although strata subdivision of the application's been granted, it's very unlikely that anyone will ever purchase one of those units without an occupation certificate having been issued. Meanwhile, the applicant's suffering depreciation of about $15,000 per week in the value of those units, not being able to sell them. I'm not trying to minimise the significance of the breach of process. I'm just trying to balance the argument of whether refusal of the application outweighs the impacts on the applicant. What will also happen is the applicant will be forced to appeal to the Land and Environment Court, where I have no doubt that the appeal will be settled by a conciliated agreement. I've been involved in many conciliated agreements in the Land and Environment Court, and in my view, the issues that arise in this application are eminently resolvable by way of agreement with the council. So the panel doesn't have to put the applicant or the council to that expense in order to achieve the outcome of ensuring this building is built in accordance with the approved plan. If the council's willing to grant consent to the application subject to conditions. There's four areas of non-compliance that are driving the council officer's recommendation for refusal. And might I say there's two issues of non-compliance where the council officers agree are acceptable and the applicant supports those issues, and that is the revised roof form, which has increased the height of the building, and the installation of windows in places where there were not windows under the approved plan. Can I just hand up to the panel a document? If I can ask you to share the first page, there's three pages in this document. The first page is an extract from the approved plans under the development consent. It shows the rooftop terrace, which is the first item of non-compliance that the council officers criticise. The rooftop terrace is approved as a usable area. Whether it's habitable and whatever the definition of habitable is another matter, but it's approved as a usable area. This application, the modification application, doesn't seek to change that use. There have been some changes to the building form in the nature of construction of a frame for closing off of doors to be installed, and also a solid wall, which have caused the council officers to suspect that it's going to be used as a livable area. The applicant doesn't intend to use it as a livable area and agrees to remove the door frame. The second sheet that you see in that bundle of pages is a comparison between the northern elevation at the top level, as originally approved, and which is the top diagram, and the bottom diagram is the elevation as constructed. You'll see, as approved, on the right-hand side of the roof, there is an opening, which was just a clear opening, as approved. And on the bottom sketch, it's been filled in. There was a modification in between that opened that opening into a clear balustrade and turned it into a balcony. That wasn't constructed in accordance with that plan because the applicant was advised by a structural engineer that there needed to be some sort of structural support on that roof. Now, the third area of non-compliance hasn't actually occurred yet. It's a proposal to install a beehive area on top of the roof. It's been partly constructed in terms of a balustrade or temporary balustrade put around the edges of the building. If that is causing the council officer's concern about non-compliance, then the applicant is happy to withdraw that part of the application, not proceed with that part of the application, and just turn it back into a roof as originally approved. The last area of non-compliance is the installation of aluminium louvers on the northern balconies of floors 2 to 6. These were installed. I'll let Anthony Soleri explain why they were installed, but the applicant was advised that those louvers didn't affect the solar access to the units, but concedes that hasn't been enough to convince the council officers about the impact on the amenity of the units, and is happy to, if the panel is not doesn't agree with the applicant that it doesn't affect solar access, then the applicant is happy to have those elements removed from the building prior to occupation certificate. The third document that I've given you there is some suggested wording for a condition. If the panel is minded to recommend to the council that it be approved subject to conditions, the first condition is that the following building work must be carried out prior to issue of an occupation certificate. First item is the existing unapproved door frame in the rooftop terrace area is to be removed and reinstated as trafficable area. And the second item to be removed is the existing unapproved aluminium louvers on the north-facing balconies. The second item is a clarification as to what is and is not approved as part of the modification. And it reads, the following elements of the modification application B are not approved. First, use of undercover part of the rooftop terrace for habitable purposes, and secondly, use of the rooftop for beekeeping. So, panel, I'd encourage you to have a practical look at what is likely to be achieved by refusal of this application, and consider whether a more efficient way of dealing with it is approval subject to conditions. That's all I've got to say. Mr. Soler is here to explain why the changes were made and his role in the process. And Mr. Jolly's surveyor, he's here to really answer any questions about surveying matters that the panel might have. It is. No, there wasn't.
So just to understand, the matter was refused, presumably the ask for the original application for the list to be sent. The review didn't change anything, it just asked the same thing again.
With additional information.
In reading the report, there was a concern that there wasn't sufficient information to identify whether or not the unit still met ADG requirements for solar access. I'm just wondering,
Is that information
been forthcoming, or that you're proposing your proposition to the panel at this stage is just to remove those louvers?
Unless the panel's satisfied that they're has been sufficient information.
I think at the moment probably I doubt we will get there.
If that's the case, then the proposition by the applicant is those will be removed prior to occupation certificate.
Okay, so this might not be you either. So if that was something that we were prepared to consider, how would you propose to deal with the screening of what are quite large air conditioning units on those balconies? Is there another suggestion that can be put at some point?
I'll let Mr. Solera answer that.
That's right. Yep. Okay, panel, do you have anything? Any other questions for Mr. Mandy?
A part of the proposal that's before us, as I understand, is also to allow solar panels to be installed on that roof. Now, my concern is that the strata plan that we've, the draft strata plan that we understand it's up for approval, but it's not an officially stamped document
yet.
It's
been approved.
Has it? Oh, well, whatever. It actually doesn't show that area of the roof, the southern section, is a part of the top unit. So they won't have any entitlement
to
use that area for solar panels. Even if we say no to beekeeping, you made no mention of the solar panels, or the. And I just want to understand whether there's a proposal to use that part of the roof that isn't included in the strata plan.
I don't have the strata plan in front of me, but if it's on the roof, it would generally be part of common property if it's part of the structure, because all structures under strata plans are common property. Mr. Solera might answer the question about whether it's going to be part of the application going forward, but my understanding was that the council officers took no issue with the solar panels. It wasn't an ideal location for solar panels, but
you understand my point is it's nothing to do. I applaud anyone wanting to install solar panels, but not in an area of a strata building that they're not entitled to use for their private use.
I assume the strata panels are designed to service the whole building, in which case they should be located on common property, not on entitlement.
Yep. So we'll seek clarification of that.
They're the main BCA compliant. They are the only BCA compliance changes. The closing in of the opening is a structural engineering issue.
Well, that was my other question. You said you got engineering advice. Was there any documentation provided to say that there was a reason for that? So
can
it
I
wasn't.
Leave, can yeah. I leave that for Mr. Salera?
Sure.
He's the project manager.
Sure.
Michael.
Thank you.
Mr. Salero? So you probably just need to talk to some of those things that we asked the question on, unless there's something that you particularly want to say. But
hey, Carl, if you guys would like to ask me direct questions, or I could read my statement, it's up to you guys. How you want to?
So Michael's actually put some propositions to us.
Yep.
Is there other things that you wanted to add that you felt that we should be aware of?
I don't think so.
You have a rethink after we've actually asked you. So there was the question about information from an engineering point of view, just that last question.
Okay. Well, I can satisfy
so
that.
That's one. Yep. And then the question about the proposition that if the louvers are going to be, you know, suggestion that the louvers are removed from the northern elevation or that additional information is provided to the council to demonstrate that there's no reduction in the solar aspect of those units, which hasn't been done. But if they are to be removed, what is the solution to the screening of those air conditioning units? And then the BCA compliance, where, you know, what things have been done to comply with BCA compliance, and then just picking up the clarification of 2 points. Is the solar panels still proposed? Are they proposed to service the whole of the building? And a question as to are they in the appropriate location?
Okay, well, I think Alison, probably the best way for me to do all that and remember that is to read the state. Sorry, I just wasn't close enough. I think probably the easiest way to satisfy those questions is to read my statement.
Okay.
I've prepared a statement. I think
it
answers all that plus some. So basically, I just wanted to start with a bit of background information. I'll keep it brief, but a bit of background information into myself. My name is obviously, as started, Anthony Salera, and I am the owner and sole director of Tier 1 Construction Group, the building company responsible for the construction of Aileron Apartments at 1921 Campbell Street, Wollongong. I've lived circa 38 years of 40 years of my life in Wollongong, 18 of which I've been involved in construction. Throughout these years, I've studied extensively at local institutions to achieve many accreditations associated with the industry. An advanced diploma in construction being the most recognised that I've achieved. I personally hold an open builder's licence in both New South Wales and Queensland. I think the easiest way for me to present information today is in a summary of the items that, from reading Council's reports, I believe are of contention. They are listed on page 1 of the Wollongong Local Planning Panel Assessment Report and are as follows. 1, streetscape. 2, building height exceeds 24 metres. 3, solar access to private open space. And 4, proposed habitable use of both non-habitable and non-trafficable areas. Streetscape impacts. I believe after discussions with Council that these impacts relate to a proposed item yet to be constructed, which is the screening structure at the lower roof level of the building. The intention of this screen is to provide a safe, sheltered area to envelop a rooftop bee/solar garden. I think that this proposal has been misunderstood a little bit in both Council reports and both the public domain from comments. There has been insinuation for potential use of this area to be obviously exploited by the developer for maybe personal or financial gain. The design intent is mine, as my passion is creating a future for my 4 young children and theirs to come. I have here in my hand documents, here, sorry, in the folder, I have documents and photographs going back to the 16th of April 2015, where I first began to try and encourage or impose, I suppose, sustainable green development onto developers that were creating massive high-rise projects in built-up urban areas. The development that I have in here, in question, consisted of four 10-storey towers over two underground basements, 81 residential units. It wasn't in this town, but it was in Brisbane. Where did I go with this? I got approximately 10% of pre-sales agreeing to add to the additional cost of the solar if it went ahead. The initiative was solar. It wasn't the B-gun, but it was a solar-driven building. 10% of the people that had purchased those off the plans agreed to pay if we went ahead with it. Long story short, the developer's advice to me was not to be a pioneer and just move on with finishing the building. This development was different. I was given autonomy to express my ideas and challenge the principles behind city living in high-rise buildings. The bee garden I could talk about for hours, but basically I'm an apiarist, bee farmer. I've got photos in here as well going back 3 years of myself, well, my four kids and I, looking after bees and profiting from their work. Buildings in built-up areas need to become stepping stones, otherwise we will cut off the corridors that bees require to survive. If we don't be careful, we will soon be using man-made pollen clouds to cross-pollinate like they do in Asia, most Asian countries now, and European countries. In saying all this, my suggestion is that if all community council and panel members are not in favour of this item, then reluctantly I will remove the request. The temporary handrail that you see that is currently visible from the street from Kemble Street will be removed immediately and the area will remain as per the approved drawings. Item two, building height. Building height exceeds 24 metres. Should the panel request further information, I can expand on the reasons behind the minor height increase, but as stated in the most recent report from Council's Senior Development Project Officer, the height is considered acceptable and that views are not expected to be adversely affected or impacted. We also have, which I can provide to the panel, we also have a report from a professional consultant. Unfortunately, he couldn't be here today because he is spending this week down in Melbourne for the Cup. But Deneb Designs are an architectural firm and a member of the Australian Association of Architectural Illustrators. They conclude in their reports that there has been no impact to the critical areas of foreshore and water views. They also state that both DA-approved and as-built drawings equally show a very similar impact to the view from the position surveyed. Next point is solar access. Again, I would like to refer to a report from Deneb Design. The solar access availability to the project remains unchanged, with all units that receive sunlight remaining to do so. Reference to Deneb Design, solar report provides a two-hour compliance table. So within his report, there's a two-hour compliance table, and it should be noted that the presence of the louver system may obtain a greater compliance to the actual design guide objectives of the solar access code by way of enabling the outdoor areas to be utilised more often due to the greater level of privacy now afforded.
Can I just stop you there?
I'm nearly finished.
So, no, I'm picking up on that point.
Okay.
So, because the report that we have in front of us is that there's been insufficient information. So your architect just saying something isn't helpful.
He's actually done
so it. So did he do eye of sun diagrams?
I've got
and
it
then
here.
Did he compare it to what was approved?
He did.
Because I'm having a little bit of difficulty understanding how it is exactly the same.
It's all here. And he's actually formulated the table. I can present the report if you'd like.
Yeah, well, I'll probably hold on to it at the moment.
Cool.
Because at the moment it's not something that's been considered.
Yeah, it's definitely in there. It's definitely in there.
Yeah, but did it get submitted to council?
Yes, it did. Oh, there was just another thing too. There's also, I'm not sure if you're aware, in the report it states that there wasn't a BASIC certificate submitted. There is a BASIC certificate also, a current BASIC certificate, an updated one. Okay, I'll just continue. I'm nearly finished. The inclusion of the extra louvers outside of the approved plans are also necessary to satisfy DA condition 38. If you'd like me to read the condition.
No, read the condition.
The louvers also satisfy the BCA when referencing table D2.16A. I have a letter from our private certifier here that explains the codes.
We don't need them explained.
And he supports that. Outside of the before mentioned, the installation of extra louvers satisfies principles when considering the ADG, making these areas more usable. I believe that solar access has been further achieved by us maximising ceiling heights at 2.7 and habitable and non-habitable areas at 2.55. We've also installed 2,400 door frames and doors to create better cross ventilation and light penetration. All units have been completely tiled to provide solar reflection, which again increases the level of solar and thermal properties within the unit. Okay, now the proposed habitable, that this is another one of the last conditions, second last condition, item of discussion. Proposed habitable use of non-habitable and non-trafficable space. Again, from conversations with council staff and a review of both reports, this item would refer to the proposed habitable use of the terrace area at lower roof level. This item is simple to resolve, as it has never been proposed, the area has always been proposed as an open terrace with a concrete roof over, supporting approximately five square metre landing and a storeroom. The intended use of this area under the approved drawings and consent will remain the same. 2, the non-trafficable space refers to the B/solar garden. Again, simple to resolve. If all community, council and panel are not in favour of this item, then we will proceed immediately to complete this area in accordance with the approved drawings. Panel members, that pretty much concludes my statement.
So just in terms of... the questions at the beginning were...
Yep. Engineering.
Engineering. Yep. You understand the position that Mr. Manti has put to the panel in terms of requesting us to consider some conditions and concessions.
Yep. Okay,
which
I can support
is,
that.
You know, get rid of the bee,
yep.
beekeeping stuff. But the comment about the solar panels, whether they're in
easy.
An optimal
yep.
Position. Also, if the louvers were to be removed,
yep.
what is the solution to screening
okay.
the air conditioning
okay.
units that are there?
I'll start with the solar.
Yeah.
The solar, again, I think there's been a misunderstanding. My section 96 that I submitted shows the solar panel on the upper roof. The solar panels, it's quite clearly detailed in the section 96.
On top of the,
the upper roof, which was where we always propose them. I've got some sketches and drawings here of work that we've done in the past. The section 96 clearly shows, by indication, by detail and written, that the solar panels go on the upper roof. Excess solar panels, if required, was a proposal to go on the lower roof. But the design intent was
just to stop you. So those words, if excess solar panels, if required,
yep.
were to go. So
that's
based
in
the application.
Yeah, well, what
I
would always propose is that if it was approved, it would be approved under a condition due to from a design from an expert. So an expert has been to site, and I have got a quote here dating back over a year ago from where a solar expert attended site. He's given us a quote and given us a proposal. Basically said, listen, this is the infrastructure you need. This is the proposal. If it's if you want to proceed, then that's what
Sorry to interrupt. But the question is, will the solar serve the whole building or just the top unit?
The provision of solar is still relatively, although it's been around a long time, it's relatively new to high-rise buildings. So it will definitely serve the top unit, and it will try to serve the common lighting. So all the common lighting as you drive in the driveways, the common foyer lights, the lobby lights, excess will try to be pumped into the lift. As I said, at this stage it's a proposal, but our intention is to give it to everyone. The thing about the solar is, if it's out on that roof, it doesn't need to be accessible from that unit. The solar trunking is...
We understand. Okay. You don't have to tell us about solar, and I'm an environmental scientist here to deal with environmental issues, so
yep.
I applaud the installation of solar. But the concern is that the proposal appears to include the right to install solar panels on a portion of the roof
yep.
that is... common property.
Okay.
It does not belong to Unit 16, and they're therefore trying to establish, will the solar panels serve everyone in the building or be for the private use of Unit 16?
That's not the intention.
No. Until we have a design demonstrating that the whole building will be fitted out to receive the benefits of that solar, it's hard for us to make any... Yeah.
So I suggest probably the easiest way to solve that problem is a condition based on design. And I'm not
right.
a professional.
Well, so we'll deal with that then. The second concern, which council rightly raised is that you're putting, the proposition is to put solar panels on the southern side of a building, and they will be overshadowed by the building itself, and therefore will be a very minimal benefit in terms of harvesting solar power.
So I agree, and as I just stated, the solar panels are to go on the upper roof. There's no
shade. Yeah, but you've told us the upper roof and excess ones on the lower roof. So
if we could maximise it, I'm just saying we want to maximise as much area as we have. That's the principle of solar.
Maybe stop trying to maximise it and just say where, so we can deal with.
Yep.
So at the moment, you know, as I said, we've got a report in front of us that we think it's on currently being proposed on an area of roof that was to be inaccessible. There's problems there with the beehive, and it would appear to be underperforming place for solar panels.
Okay.
So what you're saying, so we're clear, because we're going to kind of make some recommendations to council about this, that the solar panels would go on the upper roof, and we'd have to check whether that's even in the application.
It is.
I think you should be probably stop talking about excess or possible. It's got to be very clear cut as to what is being put in front of us. And at the position, if I'm trying to understand that, is the building being set up for those solar panels to serve the whole of the building, or is it to serve just the top unit?
Okay.
So which is it?
My intention is
intention's not an
answer. To serve whatever's possible.
Black or white?
Whatever's possible.
Black or white? The whole of the building or...
The whole of the building.
Okay.
So I have another question, which you said that in terms of solar access with regard to the solar performance requirements of that you've maximised the ceiling and door heights. Right. Was that in your approved DA? Have you changed the...
No, I haven't changed anything.
No, so there's no additional... So you've made no changes
Definitely
to the... Right.
Definitely.
But you have made a change to solar access via the installation of louvers. Okay.
Yep.
So that's our concern and council's concern. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. So I think we've done with the solar panels. We understand your position about the beehives, your and where they may or may not go. The...
Question: why wouldn't you put the beehives on the terrace itself? That it is a part of the strata entitlement of Unit 16, that forms part of Unit 16.
Put on the balcony of the unit.
Yep.
Because the beehive is not for that unit. The beehive is for the community as a whole.
I see.
It's
okay.
That
so
unit.
That's a proposition to put to the strata.
A beehive, as I've
yep.
just
okay.
kind of
to the to yeah, okay.
The bees just need
that's
something.
Not something that's necessarily not possible. It's something for the future.
Yep.
I have a beehive in my garden, but it's native bees.
Yeah, we've got those too.
Okay. So, I'll be very honest. I have great difficulty thinking that the installation of the louvers on the northern side of the balconies is not having an effect on solar access.
Okay.
I think it is. So the position that's been put to us is that they could be removed. If they were to be removed, what would your solution to the screening of the air conditioning units be?
That's a tough one. The only solution from experience would be an obscured glass. So take out the balustrade or maybe a short panel of glass that's been obscured, normally glass or perspex that kind of still allow light to penetrate but obscure the air conditioning unit. I mean, that's normally we deal with it with louvers on every project.
Is it something that you've had a discussion with the architect of the building?
The architect of the building, no. I've had discussions with our solar access consultant. And I've obviously, just from personal experience, if there was situations in the past, I mean, it's a cheaper way of doing it maybe, but the way that I've always done it on every job is we've installed louvers.
Yeah,
I've done
the problem
them, yeah,
is
sorry,
that,
yeah.
we under, yep. that may be the case, yep. but they've come in as an afterthought on
yep.
this building.
Yes.
It's been created because of the detail of the air conditioning units turning up on a balcony on this... On the street front, which is
can I just
problematic.
Can I expand on that?
Not yet.
Okay.
So basically, it needs to be, as I said, it's having a different effect.
Definitely.
By coming in, and it's affecting the solar axis. That's, as you can see from our question, having a bit of issue with that.
If I could if I could just say one thing, those air conditionings units, they're on the stamp CC drawings. They are there. So I haven't put them there. It wasn't my decision to put them there. They quite clearly show on the plans that I have here in front of me being there. So
probably where they normally turn up on CC drawings.
Yeah, and the balconies those units only have one balcony on Kemmler Street. So very hard. So, but what I think, I believe I've done is satisfied both the DA condition and the BCA by putting that one louver there. I mean, the louver's right next door to a massive window which allows a massive amount of sun penetration.
Can I then just ask a question? Because if we're going to look at this at options, is there an option to install movable and openable louvers? Once you have openable louvers, you have solar access when you want it and not when you don't.
I agree. So the issue with operable louvers, we do have sliding louvers on the building, which are as per the DA. The thing about operable blades, obviously you would need to go and adjust them every hour to maintain sunlight access, but the problem we've had as a builder, and it's a big issue that we have, is maintenance. And the operable louvers in Wollongong, just they rattle with the wind, they rattle, they shake, they cause noise problems. We've had issues in Wollongong where neighbours have made us remove the operable louvers because they can't sleep at night because they're going like that. Those fixed louvers, we had a big wind not long ago, and even those fixed louvers create a bit of vibration, and
understood, okay.
Sorry, so that's the reason.
Any other...
The engineering? We'll cover that.
Just on the question...
We'll just stick with solar access at the moment.
We'll come back to that.
Get Steve's just...
On the question of the louvers, wouldn't it be possible to reduce the height of the louver screens? The air conditioning units only project maybe a couple of hundred above the solid balcony.
Yep.
So why do you have to have louvers going up to ceiling height on that?
Climbable element. The climbable element in the BCA states that basically someone can climb on top of the air conditioning, a child can climb on top of the air conditioning and then fall over the edge. So it's the metre clause. It's that 1 metre over 4 metres. Anything over 4 metres off a balcony, it's the climbable element.
So what's the minimum height of the climbable element?
It's anywhere in between 50 mil and 750. Anything in between that. It's a tap. Yeah, you know, the taps on your balcony can't be within 1 metre of fall hazard. So
why does that necessitate a full height louver screen?
Because by the time you stand on top of that air conditioning, you'd be a metre over. That louver would have to be a metre. So if you were standing on top of this air conditioning here, then that louver would have to be at least a metre from that point, which is almost under the soffit. In the past, we have done that and not gone up under the soffit and left a little gap. No mechanical fixation, they're not solid.
Suggesting that air conditioning units on balconies as climbable elements probably isn't the best location for them.
So that also raises the question of it's not acceptable then to have movable louvers.
Not where there's a climbable element.
No, okay. But you could have a fixed louver at one end and a movable one the other.
Which is what we've got.
Anyhow, we can't approve that without knowing the solar access issues.
So I think we've probably done that issue to death,
it seems to me there should be a design solution for that, right? It's not just a simple thing of putting louvers full height on the north facade of a building. I think you need to look at an alternative design solution for overcoming the climbable element problem, one that doesn't necessitate a full height louver screen on the north facade.
So, as you can see, we've got some concerns about that. So
it's a tough one. A tough one. It's a tough one to solve. But as I said, it's almost on every building you look at. It's exactly the same.
It's pretty clear from tonight that there's not going to be an answer to it.
Okay.
And that the solution that's been put forward to us is we've got some concerns about it. So it's probably worth having a very detailed discussion with the designer of the building and your BCA to see if there's other ways to think about it.
Okay.
Suggestions. On from solar access to, there was another question on engineering information, and this was to do with the enclosure of the upper level unit, wasn't it?
That wall, Bernard, is on the approved CC structural drawings. It's there. No, full shear wall, because how that wall acts, below that wall, there is no structure. there's a column here and a column here, and on the next level up, that wall bridges that column to hold the roof. That I didn't make that up.
All right,
on the
so
CC drawings, that wall is there.
On that, the defence about it being on the CC drawings, the CC it still has to be consistent with the DA.
I agree.
And I think obviously there might be some issues in that. So the question was, I think, in terms of information, wasn't it?
Definitely. There's an engineer's certificate and his associated drawings attached.
I have a question about that. Was the engineer presented with the proposition of having the roof tilt down to 1.65 metres at one end, or presented with a...
I can't accurately answer that question because I wasn't that involved in the process between the architect and the engineer. I mean,
So you understand the question. I'm wanting to know whether, had the roof been built as designed, you would have needed that solution.
As I said, I can't. And whether between the engineer and the architect.
Okay, because I'm sure you could put piers with a beam, not being a builder, Bernard. But.
All right. Is there any other things that you wanted to bring to our attention? We've got a submission from Mr. Manti on your behalf, putting to us to. Perhaps make some recommendations to the council officers about the way to deal with this other than refusal.
Yes.
You can see from our questioning that we've got some question marks over some of the aspects. There's other aspects in here that, again, that we're probably quite comfortable with, and as I said, we'll work that through with council. But is there anything else that you want to say?
Alison, sorry, no, I'm quite happy.
Yeah. All right. So I did have... is there anybody else who wanted to speak on your in relation to this application tonight?
I'm really here if you had any questions with the surveying of the building. So the location of the building...
I don't think we have. No, I think those issues...
I'm the one that prepared the draft strata plan.
Yeah, okay. All right, no other questions? All right, well, thanks for that. Thanks for the submission. As I said at the beginning, this isn't a matter that we're actually determining. We will make some recommendations to council as to how we think it could proceed, and we've got the suggestions from yourself and Mr. Manti in terms of how that's
possible. All right, well, thank you to the panel. Thank you.
All right, great. Thank you. Oh, we've got no... Okay, we're just going to have a short break for 2 or 3 minutes while we try and see how to make these work. Is it not going to work? That one's not working. It was or wasn't? That was the battery, so that's working. So, yours is working. Is this one? That's working. Can you get me a clean?
Yes.
Can I just get one more? Oh, that'll do, as long as there's not a lipstick on it, was the only thing. Probably should cut it right down now because he's everything's getting held up. Okay. All right, we'll get started again. Pierre, can you just check no one's outside waiting? So we're going to move to item 2, which is the application for the change of use at 4 Auburn Street for a drug and alcohol counselling centre, and I have I'm just going to read out for the moment who I have registered and then to speak and just make sure that everyone's here. I've got a Mr. E.J. Waldron.
Yes, I'm here.
Yes, thank you. John Sperring. Thank you. Hannah Hassler. Hannah, yeah. Sarah Cole. Thanks, Sarah. Cedric Borsches. Thank you. Elaine Tregolan. See you, yes. Arthur Roris. Yep. Now, then I've got, they're all the submitters I have who aren't the who aren't representing the applicant. Is there anyone else in the audience who wanted to speak that isn't speaking on behalf of the applicant? Okay, rightio. Well, just remind me, put your hand up when I'll do a final call before I ask the applicant to come up and speak. And your name's?
Mike Turvey.
Mike Turvey. Okay, so, and then I've got for the applicant, I've got Richard Cardbury. Richard. Colleen Lux. Colleen. Mark Thompson. Thanks, Mark. John McEwen. Thanks, John. And David Oliver. David, that's it. Okay, and that's the team for you guys. Okay. All right, so as I said at the beginning of the meeting, we've been to the site. We've actually got all the objections as well, and also were able to, we had time to go to the Denison Street site as well, so we're actually able to just have understand where that was and the context of the site of the existing facility. So, with that, Mr. Waldron, did you want to speak?
My name is Jack Waldron. I'm a 68-year-old pensioner, and I've lived in Wollongong, except for travel, for most of my life. I'm a member of the Lysards Credit Union. I have been for quite a while, a number of years, 30 years. I've been 38 years in the steel industry. Actually, I looked at my little statement and said I was going to be rude and ask something like that, but I'll change that. I've got my glass on too. And this was the rude part. I was going to ask,
well, what is the panel... Just have a think about that what before is the ask it.
don't front of you, get me. What is the panel's expertise in making this decision? That's what I was saying. I've just listened to you guys and saying, well, looks like he knows where you're at. Anyway... there are 80-plus submissions about this chosen site, and I believe not one would be in favour of this site. And are we wasting our own time being here? Because apparently, according to the Mercury, the decision has already been made. It's been approved by council. That's what I said in today's page two. Unreal. They go make a heap of spelling mistakes too. Don't worry. They don't proofread. Okay. We have grave concerns in the safety amongst a whole lot of other issues, which includes parking, gathering of people. There's heaps of issues probably have been put into the thing. If it goes ahead, there will be three... And I call it a mental health clinic because you can call it what you like, a rehabilitation or whatever.
Do you think you've just pressed your button and turned it off?
Hello.
Yeah, that's better.
I did. They asked me to sing.
So, you know, like what we're interested in is your concerns about this centre.
Oh, my concerns.
Not interested in what the Mercury had to say.
There'll be three mental clinics within 100 metres of each other. This one is probably the worst. The gathering of they're like birds of a feather. They flock together. And they're very intimidating. They're rude sometimes. You've only got to go into town and see it yourself. Who are we up to? I'm going to say Wollongong City Council promotes business in the district. However, two businesses have already vacated these premises and more are contemplating moving. Now, I don't know if that goes against the grain or not, but that's all I've got to say. I'm not happy about it. There's a lot of elderly people that use that credit union, and there's people of they're not, you know, nice people. Some of them are rude.
All right, so I just be careful in making aspersions against people who aren't here. And as you said, the panel is interested in the issues.
Yeah, well,
I'm not interested.
I'm concerned about the safety of elderly people visiting that financial institution.
Okay, so you have a safety concern.
I have a great safety. There's no parking. There isn't any parking. There's a lot. There was no parking, and that's my safety concern. That's the one. That's basically I'm on about. Okay, that's all I got to say.
All right. Okay.
Thank you.
No questions?
Any questions?
Thank you.
No?
No. Thank you. I've got Mr. John Sperring.
Thank you. Council members, ladies and gentlemen. My name is John Sperring. I'm a home owner in Wollongong and a long-term resident. I was born here. And I work for a federal government organisation with a building overlooking Loudoun Square, specifically the Australian Hydrographic Office. It overlooks the Wollongong Railway Station and the proposed site of what is commonly called in the city the methadone clinic, or the proposed methadone clinic. I don't represent my work organisation, but I have garnered some comments from the staff there. So I've just generally incorporated these in my following comments. But as a private rate-paying citizen of the Wollongong community, that's why I'm here. I walk to and from the office, and so I'm aware of changes in the city and who gathers where and what kind of people they are. And while I recognise that this proposed relocation of the methadone clinics, I'll just refer to it as that, is the most convenient relocation from its current site, I do question the wisdom of moving it to one of the main gateways into the city, the Wollongong Railway Station. There's a lot of people use the railway station to get there. At the very least, it's a terrible look for visitors to Wollongong to be greeted with the sight of a drug rehabilitation centre and all that comes with it. Having worked at the same organisation since 1995, I've witnessed the downturn of retail and small businesses on the Western Crown Street area, the Northern Auburn Street, and most particularly in and around the Piccadilly Centre, due in no small part to the location of the current methadone clinic nearby and its client base. Now, while I have no statistical evidence to support a claim that crime in and around the Wollongong Railway Station and the Piccadilly Centre has increased over recent years, I'm postulating that petty crime, such as public nuisance and offensive behaviour, will increase. And other more serious crimes, such as assault and theft, will also increase. It's also my contention that small businesses in the immediate adjacent area, such as cafes and coffee shops, will, for example, currently located in and around the Loudoun Square, Auburn Street and Station Streets will suffer and will perhaps elect to cease their lease and close their business and move if the methadone clinic is moved into the building referred as 4 Auburn Street, but in fact faces Loudoun Square if that goes ahead. I implore Council to consider moving the methadone clinic elsewhere. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Is there any questions of John at all? No. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hannah Hassler.
Hello, my name's Hannah. I'm an owner at the Vivid Apartment Units at 14 to 18 Auburn Street. I work, study and live in Wollongong. A lot of the time I walk or use public transport, and that's one of the main reasons why I wanted to address the panel today, because I feel that if the methadone clinic were to be moved to right across my apartment, I would be very adversely affected. And I think I speak for the wider young female community when walking around and stuff. You want to feel safe in your own city. So I just don't think the proposed relocation of the methadone clinic should go to head to such a central and upcoming location. Wollongong has quite a high residential population density, and it just doesn't seem appropriate to move it into such a location. There's also, so as the previous respondent said, there's also a variety of people that are starting to live in the area, such as working families and elderly sports fans coming to visit Wollongong, and in the school holidays, lots of children probably using public transport. And just for the safety of the whole cross-section of the community, it doesn't seem appropriate and doesn't seem like it would encourage the use of public transport if it would, if the methadone clinic were to be located right at the in the centre of town, at, you know, where the train station is and all of the main bus links. I went to school at St Mary's, and I caught the train from Kiama to Wollongong every morning and walked from the train station to school. And I don't think that I would do that if I knew that I had to walk across the path of people that are using methadone, because these individuals, they're suffering from serious withdrawal symptoms of the use of much harder drugs such as heroin and other things of the like. So, and that also, without trying to be so subjective, they're often fall back into the cycle of taking heroin and harder drugs because the withdrawal symptoms are so discomforting.
Can I just stop you now?
Sure.
I think it's really important that you speak about the issues is with application and don't talk in generalities about issues that affect particular people with drug and alcohol problems, unless I'm going to understand that you're no expert in this area. You didn't say to us that you're someone who works in the area. So I really don't think that.
But from research, from what I can find on academic papers and whatnot,
again,
I really suggest that.
Yeah, I'm not interested. I'm just going to shut it down. I am not interested in hearing from anybody who is not working in that industry commenting on issues affecting people with drug and alcohol issues.
In my formal submission, I referenced some papers that said that exact quote, so I think I'd just like to remind you of that. And another part of my submission was, again, the safety, especially surrounding this group of people. They often are quite, like what the previous people were saying, they're quite inclined to, you know, with all of their issues and stuff, they might be.
Again, is this, again, can you be very careful?
Yeah.
Unless you've, you know, this is, again, it's sounding very much to me as a broad generalisation with any direct experience in the area. So you live in the area.
Yep.
Your house is very close by.
Yeah.
I'm interested in the planning issues
that
this use and the things associated with this use that you feel concerned about. Now, I'm hearing you about safety and your concerns about walking in the area. Is there anything else?
I don't think that the safety should be overlooked, especially what happened in Denison Street earlier this year when somebody was murdered. So I really strongly object to this proposed relocation, and I just for the main reasons being safety of the community, for bringing up the economic status of Wollongong to, you know, help the city move forward and become more of a thriving economic place. I don't think putting the methadone clinic right at the train station is going to assist with the development of Wollongong. And also...
Interrupt. Do you think helping people recover from drug addiction will help with Wollongong?
Yeah, but that doesn't have to happen in Wollongong, does it?
Where do the people from Wollongong go if they wish to recover from drug addiction or alcoholism?
Well, I would probably propose somewhere that's easy to get to, but not in the centre of the town. Would you put this rehabilitation centre in, for example, like outside of the Opera House? Like, no, because...
All right, I think we're getting a little bit... off point. Now we've got a 5-minute limit that we've actually not been very good at making sure that people stick to. So I think our first two speakers actually were probably within that 5 minute, unless you don't need to say the same thing three times. Unless you've got something new to say, I think you probably should wrap it up.
Okay. Just one more thing. I don't think it would be great for the users either, because with it being in a more central location, customers of the clinic, it could run the risk of becoming overrun, because people from other clinics might decide, oh, this one's a lot easier to get to, I can meet up with my other friends in Wollongong that use this clinic.
All right, again... I don't know. I think I'm going to thank you very much for your submission, because, again, you're moving into generalisations over something you know nothing about.
But isn't that we're all here?
No, we're here, as I said at the beginning, and I'm going to say it again.
It's just part of my concerns.
Yeah.
But thank you for listening to me, and that's all I have to say.
Right, thank you.
Thank you.
Can I just, when people are coming up, as I said at the beginning, this is a very... we do understand, the panel understands that this is a very controversial application and that people have concerns about it. But we are interested in the planning and social issues, and I don't want any comments coming forward about who these people might be, what they might do. That's not of relevance to this application. It's actually about the land use and planning issues and the social issues. And as I said, it's not helpful... It's not helpful making generalisations about people that you know nothing about. And I really, as I said, the panel's going to take a very dim view about that. So my next speaker is Sarah Cole. And we are trying to observe the 5 minutes. As I said, it's not necessary to say the same thing three times. We'll understand.
Okay, not a problem. Good evening. My name is Sarah Cole, and I moved to the Illawarra after meeting my partner whilst overseas. Mitchell is a local Wollongong resident. He was born and raised here, and he is really proud of the growth that he has seen in the region over the past 10 years. We love our local community and we work very hard to pay off our mortgage. Our current member for Wollongong, Paul Scully's vision is, I quote, to make Wollongong an even better place to live, work and raise a family. This is clearly outlined on his website. I speak to you today as we strongly oppose DA 2018-1037 to change the use of 410 Auburn Street to a drug and alcohol rehabilitation centre, specifically the relocation of the Denison Street Methadone Clinic. I have grown to love Wollongong, the Wollongong region, and made the decision to reside here. We had a dream to own our own apartment and saved extremely hard to gain money for a deposit over many, many years. Our dream was finally achieved last year when we were able to purchase our very own apartment, and we now reside at 14 to 18 Auburn Street. We have significant concerns about this proposal and believe that it is not keeping with the development of the surrounding area and is out of character for the existing neighbourhood and does not contribute to Wollongong City Council vision to improve the Wollongong City Centre. I personally need to feel safe in my own community. I enjoy running and bike riding around my neighbourhood. I often use the train station for early morning transport to Sydney. I feel that the newly proposed clinic location takes away these freedoms and my feeling of safety within my immediate neighbourhood. My partner and I chose this location specifically for its growth and as well as our belief in the direction Wollongong City is going. Our primary concerns include an increase in crime, drug-related crime, personal crime, property vandalism. We currently keep our vehicle on the road, and with the relocation of the clinic, this would mean our car would potentially be unsafe. This would add to stress and therefore affect our overall well-being. There may be an increase in antisocial behaviour, noise, yelling, threatening, intimidating behaviour. Reduce safety for apartment residents as well as those living or working in the area. A reduced incentive for other businesses to open in the area. It is incompatible with the development of the area as residential as well as the commercial as per Zone B3 objectives in the Wollongong Local Environmental Plan 2009. Detrimental economic impact to the commercial interest in the locality, e.g. negative impact on tourism with visitors leaving the train station and seeing the clinic, reduced redevelopment or investment in the area, reduced appeal for the business to occupy commercial spaces. Local school students that use the Wollongong train station as transport to and from school would be exposed to the clinic and feel less safe to travel independently. Reduce residential property values and rental returns. Outlined in the Wollongong City Council strategic plan, our Lord Mayor Gordon Bradbury states, "The well-being of our safety of our community continues to be a priority." Placing a methadone clinic right next to a 9-storey, 60-apartment building completely contradicts this statement. There is no denying that placing a methadone clinic right next to a train station will be absolutely detrimental to the growth and the perception of this area. In Objective 2.3 of the Wollongong Strategic Plan, it states, "The profile of Wollongong as a regional city of the Illawarra is to be expanded and improved."
You're just on 5, so do you want to I think you did quite a good summary, just sure. What you're going through. You had some kind of key points that you're concerned about, so I understand those.
Okay,
so
not
just
a problem.
Want to, Brian, to bring your summary together.
Absolutely. So there's more objectives there. So it actually contradicts Objective 2.3.1, 2.3.2, 2.3.3. And I've also got a statement here from, well, we believe that this is a shared view of residents within Wollongong. As a united front, and we cannot deny the overwhelming concerns in regards to this proposal and my personal safety and the safety of many residents, if not all residents, in our apartment block. As stated in the Illawarra Mercury on the 7th of May 2018, Mr. Richard Carberry, the current manager of the clinic, stated that 70% of the methadone users in Illawarra receive their medication from pharmacies. Therefore, adding a clinic to my neighbourhood would take away much on the amenity that I enjoy and only add a small amount of value to patients in the Illawarra.
Summary.
Yeah. Okay, got it. I would also like to state that Wollongong Council has an undeniable obligation to protect all of its residents that live in the area as well as tourists accessing the area. There is absolutely no way that Wollongong Council can 100% guarantee the safety of the community if it was to be relocated to this area. My main point is that the spontaneity and unpredictability of the clientele in this clinic is clearly evident. So I'm asking you today that you support us in opposing the plans as we move forward in making Wollongong a safe as well as a better place to live, work and raise a family. Thank you for your time.
Okay, thanks, Sarah. Any questions of Sarah? Just hang on a sec.
Have you read the submission?
Yes.
The hours of operation, the security, etc. So your understanding of that?
Yes.
Okay. I just want.
I often leave my house early in the morning to exercise.
No, it's just a general question.
Yeah, I have. Okay. Yeah.
Next submitter, Cedric Borshes.
Good day. My name is Cedric. I have a coffee shop in number 4 Auburn Street. And if they open the methadone clinic, I will be out of business within a couple of months because 90% of my clientele will disappear. I cannot leave my staff in there on their own if the methadone clinic opens up because they will be harassed and it will be very unsafe even for my wife. I wouldn't even think about leaving her there. And I read that somewhere along the line they're going to have security cameras and they're going to have some guards over there too, and the security cameras are not going to work because that's only after the fact. And I am also worried about the kids that come to the station every morning when they go to school, and I don't know if the council will be able to ensure that the children that are catching the train going to school every day and will be able to protect them from the harassment from the from the people over there that are on the drugs. And the other problem that we're going to have is the taxi drivers sitting over there all day, every day at the station. Once you start putting the methadone clinic there, they'll also disappear and you won't have a taxi driver sitting around waiting for people to come in. And Wollongong Station is the centre for people to get off the train. We just had the bike race from Sydney to Wollongong. And all the people were catching the train back up to Sydney. And if it's a drug, you know, if you have the methadone clinic there, I think that a lot of people won't come. And the tourism in Wollongong will really be affected by the by what they propose now. And I think that all the businesses in Wollongong will have a bit of a problem because they won't be getting the tourism coming in there and the people won't be going walking down to up Auburn Street or going up to Crown Street to walk down to the shopping malls. And there's going to be a lot of congestion around that area. There's going to be no parking. And we know that the people start coming in the morning at 5 o'clock in the morning and people that commute to Sydney every day, they come down to the parking station at 5 o'clock in the morning. And they will be harassed by these people. That's all I have to say. Thanks.
All right. Thank you. Have we got any questions of Cedric?
Has the clinic operating in Denison Street had any effect on your business?
No. Well, they're far away.
Yeah.
I'm right down in Auburn Street.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
No, that was just
okay. Thanks.
Sorry, I have a question.
Yeah.
Where do you access your coffee shop from?
I beg your pardon?
Where's the entry to your coffee shop?
My coffee shop is on the front on Auburn Street.
Mm-hmm.
right? So, and the proposed clinic is behind me.
Yes, no, I know the location, but yeah. If I were going to have a coffee, where would I? How would I get into your coffee shop?
You could come right past the clinic into my coffee shop.
Through the car park?
Yeah, through the car park. You can walk into my coffee shop.
Okay.
And you could come around the front.
Okay, so where's the main entry?
Where's the main? The main entry is in Auburn Street.
Auburn Street, yes. Thank you.
Okay.
Elaine?
The opportunity to speak tonight, panel members. My name is Elaine Traglone. I'm from TCG Planning. I act on behalf of two landholders, but one in specifically tonight, and that is the Synergy Group, who are the owner of the adjacent building immediately to the south. So that is the commercial building immediately to the south, so they have a common wall that abuts. Before I start, can I make it very clear that my submission tonight is based purely on planning grounds? I'm not here to discuss the merits of it from a social aspect. Just to make you aware, I fully support drug and alcohol rehabilitation, and I work voluntarily as a facilitator in mental health, so I fully support more mental health facilities in Wollongong and through New South Wales. But having said that, I did debate at length acting on behalf of a couple of landholders just because of my strong support of the use. However, my objection tonight is based purely on site suitability. Mm-hmm. Having a look at the site, I believe that the particular use and the site are inappropriate, and I'll discuss the reasons for that. My first concern is site is the compatibility of this particular use with adjacent developments. Synergy, who own the site to the south, are intending to lodge a development application within the next few months, most likely for a mixed-use development, with residential apartments in the upper levels or possibly serviced apartments. We already have a number of units, approximately 60 units, in the Vivid building within close walking distance of this development. That development was recently constructed, and it's interesting to note that at the ground floor of that building we actually have commercial premises. Council, when it issued consent for those commercial premises, did attach hours of operation of 8:30 to 5:30 on that particular commercial uses. Yet we currently have an application before us that has intended opening hours of 6 a.m. to 1:15 p.m. Monday to Friday and 7 a.m. to 11 a.m. on Saturday and Sunday. I certainly question those extended hours of operation, particularly on Saturday and Sunday, and particularly at 6 a.m. in the morning, when I would be suggesting that any possible disturbance that occurs from gathering in that area should be considered under the nighttime noise criteria, and there's been no great consideration of potential acoustic impacts on residents during that quiet nighttime period when sleep disturbance could be an issue. Now, my particular concern, if we go back to, right back to, say, 2007, when Wollongong Council initially issued its vision for the Wollongong City Centre, we've seen over that period of time, Wollongong has continually reinforced the need for revitalisation of the western corridor of the city. My concern is that the Judith Stubbs Social Impact Statement, which is an excellent document, a very thorough document, I'll say, but it does identify some shortcomings in terms of antisocial behaviour. So purely focusing on what's identified in that document, we know from that document that this particular area will become a gathering space. It's acknowledged in that document that that will become a gathering space for people prior to 6 a.m. And I note in the council report that there's been a suggestion that one of the conditions would be management, some sort of security from 5:30 a.m. onwards. I would question the appropriateness of some sort of security measures and that use operating from 5:30 or 6 a.m. in the morning when, as noted by some of the other objectors tonight, we do see youth heading to school in the morning in that area, and I do question the compatibility of those two functions. Do also note in the report that the council officers seem to be suggesting that this is a use that will not remain indefinitely. The panel needs to be sure that in making its decision tonight, it's aware that it could be an ongoing and permanent use, and the panel needs to be comfortable with that. I draw your attention to the initial objection that was raised by State Rail that was noted in the report. And council has suggested in the report that in terms of access to the site, which is at the from the car park, that is being considered as a public road, but the ongoing ability to use that relies on a continued agreement between State Rail and Council. I would question the approval of a DA that relies on that ongoing agreement and the attachment of a condition that requires the applicant to acknowledge that if that agreement ceases at any stage, that the DA becomes null and void. I would suggest to the panel that they need to ensure that there is a permanent arrangement in place, either by right of way over that State Rail land. I also raised concern in our previous submission regarding access over the car park to the north, which provides pedestrian entry into the site itself. The sites are not consolidated. Council officers have recommended consolidation of those sites, and I'd be certainly interested to hear what the applicant has to say in terms of their acceptance of that consolidation condition. So just to sum up on my 5 minutes, in moving forward, I would suggest that I would request that the panel be very sure that the site is suitable for the intended purpose, that the compatibility of uses is there, both considering the current uses surrounding the development site and also intended future uses around that site to ensure that future sites are not sterilised, to ensure that consolidation of sites is acceptable and will be carried out, and to ensure that any consent, if it is issued, and I would strongly object to it being issued, but if it is issued, must have significantly reduced hours of operation given the surrounding uses that are occurring. Can I also just pass the panel one more item which Synergy have requested I provide to you? And that's a letter from the New South Wales Teachers Federation, who didn't come forward previously because it was a confidential matter at that stage. The DA that they're looking at lodging on the site to the immediate south is underway at the moment, and I have been advised tonight that it's about 6 months away. The New South Wales Teachers Federation are intending to be one of the occupants of the ground floor premises, and they have provided a letter that I've been asked to give to you to indicate that they would be unable to proceed with that in the event of approval. But that's for the panel's information. Thank you.
Okay. Any questions? I just... Thanks. Yeah, that's right. Just Elaine, yeah, just one or two questions.
Yes.
Just the comment about the hours, because I'm reading the concern in terms of the hours.
Mm-hmm.
It's 5:30 to 1 p.m. So it's like the half days. Is it the concern around the 5:30?
It's the morning hours I think
pre-work
concerned.
Morning yes, hours. Yes. Okay.
So council, when they considered the commercial use on the other site, requested or attached a condition that required operation from 8:30 a.m., which I think is a fair call for a commercial use that's adjacent to residential premises. But I think it's the 6 a.m. that is particular concern, 7 a.m. on Sunday and Saturday, that I think is a particular concern.
But do you think, just, you know, I don't know, but, you know, for we're in the B3 commercial core area, the 8:30 start for commercial premises, personally, I think it's a bit silly.
Look, I do
agree with
you.
I would have thought it's more likely, you know, 7 a.m., you know, I would have asked for 7 a.m. to 7 p.m.
I do agree with you because we recently lodged an application for the Kells premises at the ground floor of the Vivid building, and we did request an extension of that, but certainly wasn't 6 a.m. in the morning, so, and wasn't Sunday, shall I say.
So you're, in terms of the hours, it's that early morning start and maybe the early mornings in the on the weekends?
Yes, yes.
Dave, did you have any?
I think that's answered my question, actually. You know, it would seem that if you your concerns about sleep affectation, principally, 7 a.m. would be a reasonable hour.
Well, 7 a.m. would take you out of the nighttime noise criteria, I believe.
Yeah, and 8 a.m. possibly on
Sundays.
Probably just a comment, you know, given where it's located, I don't, you know, there's probably activity at that train station.
There is. Quite,
and, yeah, I would have expected.
That in some respects is a positive, but in others it's a negative, because I think when you look at the way in which that train station operates, that's the side when you've got people coming back from Sydney. So, and you will see groups of youth gathering around there when they're meeting, they're waiting for a pickup from parents or the like. I just question the compatibility of that, and I also question when you come into Wollongong, that's really the entrance to the city. The entrance to that particular use is from the rear, and the egress is from the rear. So if we start to get gathering, as is suggested in the social impact assessment that occurs, I really question the compatibility of that with, you know, the functions of the Wollongong Railway Station. While it will give some passive surveillance, I don't believe it should be reliant on the railway station for that passive surveillance, and that's where my concern stems from. Okay.
Thanks, Elaine. Don't go yet.
To what extent do you think that issues such as those that you've just raised might be able to be dealt with by a plan of management and perhaps a complaints reporting mechanism?
Well, I would question whether the use can operate if the hours of operation are restricted. I would certainly be interested in hearing about that from the applicant. When the application was submitted, the exhibition documents that I reviewed, while Judith Stubbs did make some recommendations regarding management, at that particular time there was nothing identified in the Statement of Environmental Effects to indicate that those management measures would occur. I'm assuming. It appears from the council report there has been something else submitted, but we haven't had ability to review it. So I'm assuming that they would have to be attached as conditions of consent. I guess the question is, who's going to be responsible for the ongoing monitoring of that? And their social impact assessment does acknowledge that there are currently instances of antisocial behaviour, and I would assume at their current clinic they would have some management measures in force. Where are we falling down, or where are they falling down in terms of those management measures? And I guess it's a matter of learning from current operations and figuring out what you need to do for the future operations. But currently, the SIA does indicate there are some shortcomings with the current operation. So what will change? That's what I'm interested in hearing.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks a lot. Arthur Roris, I've got that right.
Thank you, panel. I've been listening intently to the earlier comments, and I'll try to learn from your advice. So I am not a psychologist or a counsellor, so I'll refrain from any of my own perceptions about what may be going on here, with one caveat. I do think it is valid for people who currently live in the area and who do go past the Denison Clinic to form a view as to the effect on that region. I think that's a fair enough comment without actually having been a drug counsellor. That's the first point. The second point I'd make is that I've got absolute admiration and respect for the professionals in this field. As a trade union leader, and we've got 26 affiliated unions, a lot of our work actually is in drug and alcohol rehabilitation. To that extent, I am going to draw on my expertise, because we've written half those policies at the workplace. And I'll make a couple of comments about this. It is not right, I think, to use a broad brush, and I'm sorry if I offend any of the people here, well-meaning as they are. I don't share the views that simply because someone may be recovering from an addiction that we can cast aspersions about their character. I think that's very unfair. What I would say, though, is that if we limit our analysis of a consequence simply to that cohort of people, I think we're missing the issue of what I think people are trying to say here, which is that we do have the drug running elements in town. I think we can all safely say that every town does. We don't have our heads in the sand. The question is whether other elements may or may not be attracted to also congregate in that area. The answer to that, I'm afraid, is very clear, because they're already there. And that is a reality. You talk to police and others, and everyone knows where they're going to get their next hit in town. Let's face it. We know that there are certain areas where this activity happens. I'm not being judgmental about it. I think that's pretty well known to people. The question is it's not just about those people who are seeking help. It's about others who are also see that as a good opportunity to maybe swing them the other way. And I think we can safely say that without looking at our flow charts and our data sets. I'll put that to one side and come to something that we do know well, something that does worry us a lot. I'm actually in that trade union centre at the moment, as it's known. The Teachers Federation has purchased that building. They do intend moving back in. They currently do have a spot there. The South Coast Labour Council is there as well. And a lot of our area of work is with young people. It's with 14, 15, 16, 17-year-olds. And we get to see them before they go to school. And it's handy because that's one of the reasons why the Labor Council is actually based next to that train station. So when these guys are coming in for advice about wage theft and various other issues that I'm sure you've all read about in the news, well, we're dealing with this every day now. We're getting increasingly more and more young people. We're asking them essentially to cut across not just those seeking rehabilitation, but those that are attracted to that scene in that area. That is a concern to us. Once again, being careful not to cast aspersions on everyone who's seeking treatment. But it does raise a risk, at least. Secondly, of the people that are currently working there, many of whom young women, and once again, whether it's perception, whether it's based on anything more than what they have currently experienced in the place that they work, they're all telling me they're not going to be working here if that goes ahead. And believe me, I've tried to have the discussion as well about, you know, keeping it within some realm of, reasonableness in terms of what the risks are. I can't argue with a young woman who tells me that they do not feel safe at 7 in the morning when we currently have so much antisocial activity at the front. And I won't go into details beyond saying people do their business and leave everything just out for these people to walk over, walking into the office now. That's not pleasant. I'm not going to say that that is the result of any particular methadone clinic. But once again, I'm looking at a consequential issue here of what happens if you put the two together and give an incentive perhaps to some, or at least the idea that they may get some business out of this. That, I think, is a risk. Which is why, rather than give you my views from here on in, and forgive me if this has been superseded, I'm not a health bureaucrat, but I am looking at Circular 2000 number 2 from the New South Wales Health Department of guidelines for the establishment of methadone clinics in New South Wales. I take it they are qualified to be making those assumptions. And this is what they say, not me. This is what the health department says. Point 4, policies and procedures, and I quote, methadone clinics are not to be located in or adjacent to residential areas or in other areas near to schools, colleges, or places where children and young people congregate. This is the New South Wales Department of Health in its own guidelines about where methadone clinics are to be placed and where they're not to. Now, I've got to say, if these are guidelines, and forgive me if they've been superseded, I very much doubt that the intent of those has. Because straight after that, continuum of care, we have MMC 11.6. I will hand this up for you. And it says that the... I should have brought my glasses, shouldn't I? It says the service has reasonable access to public transport and is located away from residential development. Well, you would have thought that on its own is an exclusionary issue here because you do have residential development adjacent to it. So I do sympathise with some of the people who say, why are we even discussing this when the New South Wales Department of Health has made it clear in its professional capacity and its understanding and its qualification of these issues to say, don't do it. So why would we even consider it?
You need to start to sum up.
Sure. I'll sum up this way, that, and I'll draw from this and say... And I'm glad that you raised those other issues before because it allows me not to get into my own views, which actually I'm a bit torn on this one because I recognise the need for the service. But if the Department of Health is saying don't do it near or don't put it near young people in particular and schools and residential areas, it is making assumptions. Let's just say at best here it's making assumptions. Otherwise it's actually saying very, very clearly that there may well be activities that are not consistent with residents and with young, or the best interests of young people. I find that persuasive, and I'd urge the panel to do the same. Thank you for hearing me.
Okay, thank you very much. Is there any questions? Do you want to just... what was the circular number again?
This
did
is
you put that in your submission?
Look,
did you make a submission? Sorry?
Yes, I did. Unfortunately, I've been in a very, very busy period at the moment, and I haven't had a chance to research this one to the extent that I wanted to. So I did come across this quite late. I apologise. So, but I'm happy to hand it up. It's circular number 2000/2 from the 18th of January 2000. And once again, I'm not presuming that I can say that it hasn't been superseded, though once again, I would very much doubt that those sentiments have changed.
Okay. Any questions? Oh, good. Great.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Now, that's all the people I have registered. Now, Mick, did you want to... Mike, sorry. Did you want to say anything?
Just
or?
A couple of comments.
Yeah, come on up.
Sure.
And does anybody else, before I start to ask the applicant and their representatives to talk, does anyone else in the audience wanted to have something that they need to say? And if so, please put... Yep, okay. No, you can come up after this gentleman because I won't ask again.
Thank you for the opportunity, panel. A couple of things I'd like to say. I'm a resident of Wollongong. I'm a ratepayer of Wollongong, and I work in Bareilly Street, Wollongong. I'm here on behalf of my daughter as proxy, who owns an apartment in 14 to 18 Auburn Street, Wollongong. She is the third person that's popped up here tonight. And I'd just like to congratulate those two girls that spoke before about their concerns. I'm going to reiterate those concerns very quickly. West of Bareilly Street, Wollongong Council has approved probably 4,000 apartments that either are under construction or going to be constructed. Those apartments are filled with the young people of the future, and they will have children like my daughter. We need to represent them, not us. They're the future of Wollongong, the people in those apartments. Now, that's all I really wanted to say, but I think Wollongong Council is approving a lot of apartments. Have a look who's buying them. First home buyers. My daughter is a first home buyer. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
Okay, thank you very much. So, Mick... Mike, sorry. T-U-R-V-Y.
That's correct.
Yeah, sorry.
Michael.
It would
be a council
Michael Turvey. Thank you, sorry. And your... Sorry, just sit down. Say your name, sorry.
Paul Dwyer. Manager of Lysark Credit Union.
All right, yeah.
13 Auburn Street, Wollongong. Just a couple of matters, if I can. I listened intently to Elaine's, and most of what I had to say was involved with that.
Mm-hmm.
I would back that statement up immensely. We have a couple of issues. Parking is one. At the present moment in Auburn Street, it's rare that any of our customers can get a park. And I believe the methadone clinic has something like 300 clients. I read the social impact study. Unfortunately, we weren't part of that. I don't understand why we didn't get a phone call regarding that. And the transport issue of people coming into the methadone clinic is very interesting. The percentage of people who drive cars and who actually get on trains is very interesting. From the way I see it and the way I've read it, I don't believe there'll be a car parking spot left in that area for a long time, at least until 1:30 when the place is closed, which makes it very difficult for every other business that's there at the moment. I would also like up to bring up regarding the antisocial behaviour that was in the report as well. Most of our people that come into the Lysark Credit Union are elderly people. Most of our young people use it online. We have created an atmosphere for them over the last 10 years of safety around our area. I would hate to see that diminish in any way at all. We have an element of safety with our credit union. We used to have a security guard at our credit union. We don't believe we need one anymore. I noticed in the submission that the methadone clinic is putting it together that they require a safety officer. If it is that safe to operate, I don't understand why we would need a safety officer. I don't understand why we would need a security guard. The last thing that concerns us is the people, our members, our elderly members who get off the train and come across, directly across to Lysark Credit Union. Again, over the years, when we first moved into Auburn Street 25 years ago, it was suggested to us that we shouldn't move there because that part of town wasn't a nice part of town to be in. Over the years, we've seen it improve immensely. We rarely have the police up at our place. I have rarely had to take any needles back to needle exchange places. When we first moved in, that was a element of our Monday, Tuesday morning walk around the office. So we had to lift those, take them in. I must suggest in the last while we haven't had to do that. And the behaviour around the place has been quite satisfactory. I do have concerns about safety, not only of the people that use the train station, but of our members and of our staff. The social report indicates that there is or can be antisocial behaviour and there is elements that will gather together. Just reiterating Elaine's statements on the others because I think she's stolen most of my thunder. I don't wish to say any more. Thank you. Any questions?
Yeah, just you mentioned that you think the behaviour has you've actually seen a change in that. Since you've been there, not having to pick up needles, for example. So what do you think might be, what do you think that might be as a result of? Is there more police surveillance?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, and when you first moved there, you had a security person?
Absolutely.
Because of the nature of your use or because of...
We hold cash.
So
there's a safety aspect to that. We've obviously improved the safety of our office for people and stuff like that. But that concern is not there as much now as when we first moved into the area.
And do you think that's as a result of greater police surveillance,
I think there's a lot of things involved in it. I think the activity at the train station has helped. A lot of people catch the train. A lot of people get in and out of that area. I think that the traffic movement of human people through that area makes it safer for all of us. There's a whole aspect to that that I believe, not just the one thing.
Any other questions?
Thank you.
All right, thank you very much for that. All right, that's the end of submissions from those who made particular raised particular written issues with the application. Now, I've got a number of people from the applicant side. I'm going to leave it to you guys as to how you wish to present and in the most logical and structured way that you see fit. Probably from the panels, it would be good if you could answer some of the issues that have come up and, some response to that as well in your presentation. Yeah. So I'm in your hands at the moment. As I said, I'm happy. There's a number of things that have been raised and it would be good for to hear from your side as well. Okay. Yep. The best way for you to present. And then you've got your lawyer here, haven't you? So I would probably like just to hear the conditions that are proposed and the access issue that we have out. We have advice in there. So that kind of a box of stuff. Okay.
Okay, my name's David Oliver. Mm-hmm. I did the statement of environmental effects and the planning for the project so far. So, in regards to any planning issues we have, I can answer those questions. First of all, the The problem about the car parking is that the proposal has been put forward to consolidate the lots. This property was in five different allotments, and the car parking is in different lots, so access from one lot into the other is a problem. So that is going to be consolidated, and that will solve the car parking problem. Each shop, each unit has now been allocated specific car parks, and the specific number of car parks required for the methadone clinic in particular is 8, and that has been allocated for that particular unit 5. So each unit will have the requirement according to its own development. The other issues involved are the access with the Department of Railways. Again, that's relying on the council agreement, which has been accepted by the council at this point. I'll let the lawyer, John McEwen, handle give you more details on that. Are there any questions?
I don't know whether it's for you to answer, but there were some comments about suitability of the site for this use, and particularly also in relation to hours of operation.
Yes.
Do you want to make some comments about that?
Suitability of the site is, first of all, the existing usage of that particular unit was as a sobering up clinic, which was built by the state government. It was built under an Act of Parliament, so the council did not necessarily have any say in its approval. But it was built to a very high standard. It has all the BCA requirements, very good fire rating, all this sort of thing. And it was used for nearly 4 years as a drug and rehabilitation clinic. No one really made any objection to it. Hardly anyone really knew it was there. But having said that, concurrently to put the methadone clinic there, again, the issue will be that it will be on a low-key operation. There's not going to be any advertising of the fact that it is a clinic. There's no proposal to put any signage. So the building as it stands at the moment will remain as it is. It is not going to change the look from the streetscape. The other fact is that there are other medical practitioners around the area, like the psychiatric hospital that's been opened there. The disabled people have a clinic or a facility with coffee shop and so on. And so in that area, in that end of town, there are quite a lot of medical and medical practices around the area. So I think the other thing is the public transport is there, and people can use that. Surely the people want to have the clients to have easy access to the clinic. As for, somebody made an objection about the tourists being turned off and it being an eyesore in the gateway to Wollongong. Most of the people go straight up Station Street and down Borelli Street. The current, if you like, look of that site is hidden basically by the car park, and it's not very attractive, and that is not hardly a reason to say that the methadone clinic is going to decrease from the current look of the build of the streetscape. That's up to the council to look after that. The building itself is a single-story building. It has no imposing view on the property, on the car park. Whether or not clients are going to interfere with people from the public is a matter I'll leave to our social impact person to answer, but basically the waiting room that's being proposed inside the clinic is quite a deal larger. Most people will be going straight into the waiting room and they won't be hanging around outside. The proposal is to have a security company on duty, which will be reporting and be controlled directly by the clinic's management, and they will make sure that people are not congregating outside and they're not having any doing anything antisocial or to interfere with anyone else. There is a code of conduct that the clinic has in place. That code of conduct will be adhered to by the patients. They have to sign off on that, and they can be taken off the program if they don't adhere to it. I'll let Richard go into more detail on that. So as far as the noise is concerned, again, the site is opposite a train station and a bus depot, which even in the early hours of the morning would have a reasonable amount of noise generated by people coming to and fro in the train station. People going to the clinic will simply go into the car park, park their car, get out and go into the clinic, and off they go. It's no more than 5 minutes. The average visit wouldn't be any more than 5 minutes, even if they had to see a doctor or have some test. Okay?
Okay, well, what we might do is ask the functioning and how the place operates. Those questions are probably best answered by the operator, I think. So, but I'm going to ask for questions, but I think I'll get the answers about the functioning from others.
So I'd just like to pose a general question, not just to yourself, but to all of your group. You've made some assertions about what will happen in terms of the code of conduct for the patrons, what the security guards will do. Wouldn't it be helpful if that was codified in some manner
There will be a plan of management which the security department will...
Where is it? What does it look like? That's my question. And what could it look like, and in what way could it go to addressing the concerns of the residents? Might it have a complaints mechanism which enables you to get feedback from the community and act on it and keep a record of really what the problems are?
Yeah, it will.
That's my question as a general question. What form could it take and what it could cover? And
First of all, are you the person to answer this, or is it actually something so we might just hang. So hold that question because I don't think it's the right person to answer it.
That's what I
heard. Ask questions that.
I've got two questions then. One, you've talked about how the clients will be effectively managed through a plan of management, and that they'll not be congregating much outside. There was an issue raised that drug running elements may congregate. Have you got any plans with regard to whether that might be managed? And if another one. Did you refer to the New South Wales Department of Health guidelines?
Yes.
With regard to and so could you respond to the question to the issues raised that it's near residential development, it's near a place where young people tend to congregate, that's at the train station. Could you respond to that, please?
I'll let Richard answer that question, but it is within the New South Wales guidelines that methadone clinic can be within a certain amount of residential, but you have to realise that this residential is areas we're talking about now are in a B3 commercial core. So it has to be allowed as a medical clinic. It is allowed under those rules. But the guidelines are saying, well, if it's right next door to a residential section, well, that's a problem. But at the moment, it's not.
Just when you said that the state government established a sobering up clinic there, for what years did that operate?
It operated for about 4.5 years. I think it closed the beginning of this year.
Okay, so in recent times.
Yeah.
You actually called it a drug and alcohol rehabilitation centre, which is what this has been called. Did
well,
it deal with people?
Methadone.
Yeah. So did it... Oh, well, we'll find out.
Yeah, wrong person.
The previous was more for the sobering up clinic, but it was operated by subcontracted people who were drug and rehabilitation.
What were its hours of operation?
I don't know, to be honest.
Yeah, I think. Yeah. So are there any other questions? Because David, you prepared the statement of environmental effects, so you didn't do the social impact assessment. Mm-hmm. You just did the statement of environmental effects. So there are other more planning related. I think there's a lot of information that we probably get from others in the team to address the issues that have been raised.
Okay.
Thank you, David. Now, again, running on the issues that have been raised, who do you want to talk?
Social impact,
Colleen. And then probably maybe just some social impact and then someone factually about how the actual operation runs and how it can deal with some of the issues that have been raised, and you might make reference to the current clinic as well. So, Colleen, is it?
Yep.
Yeah. My name's Colleen Lux. I'm a social planner. I'm here representing Dr. Judith Stubbs and Associates. We've been engaged by the applicant to prepare the social impact assessment. I'd like to respond to some of the concerns raised in the submissions, particularly about potential tangible impacts to crime and safety, so people actually being less safe in their area, and intangible impacts to amenity related to fears, reduced perceptions, people feeling that they're less safe in their area. The social impact assessment for this proposal has been assessed at 3 levels: the finer locality around the proposal site of Loudoun Square, based on the most direct logical pedestrian pathways for patients to and from the clinic and public transport nodes, and for residents, commercial neighbours and others walking to and from the CBD and Wollongong station. The wider locality around Wollongong station, Piccadilly, Crown Street area, which includes the existing clinic exists in this locality already and has been there for 25 years. The wider Illawarra community is the third level at which this assessment has been considered. Tangible impacts to crime and safety from moving the clinic from its existing location, 450 meters walking distance, to the proposal site do not have a rational basis. The high crime rates in this locality, which are well documented, are related to its CBD location, transport nodes, density of licensed premises, the large mall area, and a range of recreational and nighttime uses. There is no indication from the crime data that the existing clinic in this locality is a particular focus of crime in this context. In the absence of data at the fine geographic level around Loudoun Square, we rely on advice from Wollongong Local Area Command as the experts in the impact to crime and safety from this proposal. Local police have no objections to this proposal. Intangible impacts to amenity related to reduced perceptions of safety based on people in the immediate locality witnessing incidents of antisocial behavior or violence, or fears about what might happen in the area, regardless of the best evidence available of what has happened during the last 24 years operating in the same locality, are not reasonable fears and do not have a rational basis. We've considered the potential amenity impacts on the adjoining commercial neighbors, nearby residents, and other commercial neighbors, such as those on the eastern side of Auburn Street, are not adjacent, do not have clear lines of sight, and do not have to walk immediately next to this premises, the station, to access the station or the CBD. We know that residents and others in this locality already experience a range of amenity impacts due to the poor crime and safety environment. People already report that they feel less than completely safe in this area, particularly at night when the clinic is not open. The comments from one commercial neighbor who participated in our study, who talked with us about the current safety context of Loudoun Square, reaffirmed these findings. What we also know is that only 3 out of 202 pedestrians that we surveyed in the locality near the existing clinic identified the clinic as a safety concern for them. And one of those 3 did not know where it was located. Witnessing an incident of antisocial behavior, verbal argument between patients, could reasonably make some people feel uncomfortable. Whilst this is potential, it is infrequent. Commercial neighbors of the existing clinic, including those who share a car park with patients, report that such incidents occur 4 or 5 times a year, have never been directed at them or a member of the public, and have never caused them to make a complaint or call the police. Witnessing an incident of violence, again, whilst potential, is very rare. In the clinic's 24 years of operating, there have been 5 violent incidents at the clinic when police have been called. Not one incident has ever involved a member of the public or a passerby. The recent fatal stabbing earlier this year on the footpath outside the clinic is likely at the forefront for many people, and understandably. We interviewed local police in the days following this event, and police stated that the clinic is no greater risk to the public than it was previously. The probability that this would happen again is very low based on the history of the clinic. It has to go somewhere, and it is best centrally located near trains and buses so people can get in and out quickly. All of the evidence that we have suggests that people in this locality have more to fear in terms of tangible impacts to their safety from existing uses in the locality, particularly licensed premises, than from the proposed use. The fears expressed in some of the submissions about the proposed use are more likely based on perceived prejudice about the type of people using this clinic. Junkies, drug addicts, smackheads, deadbeats. Regardless of patients' endeavours to positively address their drug dependency and their varied socioeconomic profile.
Nobody referred to anybody about like that tonight. So nobody spoke about people coming to the centre in that way. I just think that's important. It might have come out in your surveys, but no one tonight has spoken in that manner.
Thank you. Any intangible impacts to amenity, importantly, are largely able to be mitigated through conditions that we've recommended and have been recommended by council, including on-site security personnel during the morning period, restricting early morning access, that 6 a.m. period, to working patients, enhanced lighting and CCTV, as well as management practices and policies to further reduce any potential impacts on the wider locality. Any potential intangible impacts to amenity need to be weighed against the enormous benefit of the clinic, especially on a site that is accessible to public transport and the services that patients need to make positive lifestyle changes. The potential adverse impact of refusal on patients and the wider community is a matter of public interest. Refusal could lead to the clinic being unable to operate and provide services to nearly 40% of those seeking such treatment in the Illawarra Shoalhaven Health District. Where will current and future patients go for dosing if the clinic is unable to operate? Services through the public system would likely come at significant cost to the community. There does not appear to be capacity among existing private prescribers and dosing sites to meet current or future need. And let's not forget that people who drop out of methadone treatment, particularly in their first year, are highly likely to return to opioid use, criminal activity, and social dysfunction. And that for every 100 people in methadone treatment for 1 year, New South Wales gets 12 fewer robberies, 57 fewer break and enters, and 56 fewer motor vehicle thefts. People are often uncomfortable with the siting of services for people with complex needs, drug and alcohol services, mental health services, social housing. Their perceptions do not outweigh the significant positive benefits of these services, nor do they provide a reasonable rationale for refusal. Like to comment on the reference to the guideline saying methadone clinic can't be near residents.
So that's the 2000 guideline.
Yep.
Is it Department of Health? Is it still current? Circular 2000/2.
I don't know if there's a more refined version of that circular. There's nothing in the current guidelines about treating patients that refers to that. I have looked at the 12 private clinics in New South Wales. We know that when the private clinics were established, which Richard can probably speak about this, in the late mid-90s or so, same as Denison Street, they were often located in outer CBD areas. And we know that those locations have redeveloped over time, and many of them now are located next to adjacent residential homes and uses. We can provide that additional information if you like. They are existing alongside residents and have done for many years, regardless of what the circular says from the year 2000. The main response to that as well is that this is a use that exists in the locality already. People that are using this area, whether they're students, children, elderly people, they're interacting with people, patients, already in this locality that are coming and going by public transport to get to Denison Street now and have been for many years.
What about the concern raised that drug running elements may congregate there?
I can't comment on that. I'd assume that's a policing issue. That's nothing I investigated. I can't comment on that. Questions?
I think operationally, I've probably got more operational questions. I'm not sure whether I was going to just ask about the starting hours, but that's probably not you. It's probably
we've recommended that in order to reduce. I mean, the observations I made in that early morning period were there was some congregation out the front. And
is that in observations of the existing facility in Denison Street?
Correct.
Yeah, so there was a bit of congregation.
Yes, not loud. No. I mean, obviously this is a discrete period of time, a snapshot, if you like. It was orderly, but there were people there before the starting time. And in order to reduce that, we've recommended that early morning start time be reduced for working patients, just to sort of stagger that out in the early morning period, which has been accepted by the clinic as a recommendation.
This might be a question again for the operators, but does the current facility have a security guard on site?
No, they don't.
Do you know if they've ever had one? Okay, you can.
They can
respond
better
to
than
that.
I can.
Any other questions for Colin?
Quick question. You spoke of similar clinics operating in proximity to residential development. Clearly, there must be some sort of management measures taken to facilitate the workability of that. Are you aware of what sort of measures commonly occur enacted when you have a methadone clinic in proximity to residential development to allay the real and the perceived fears of residents?
I would say that the management practices of the existing clinic would provide a good guide to that, considering the evidence we have of the impact they've had on their existing neighbours and people they share a car park with to date that are in close proximity and coming and going just the same as a resident might be. It's important to remember the opening hours of this clinic. This is not something that occurs at night.
Are there any data on... Well, we had an issue raised that there's a reduced incentive for businesses to open in the area. Are there any...
From looking at there's no indication that the presence of a methadone clinic reduces property values in an area in terms of whether it stifles business, other commercial investment, that's not anything we've looked at. As I've mentioned to you, the history of where private methadone clinics have been established in New South Wales and the metropolitan area, which is where they mostly are, Liverpool, I mean, there's a list in our report. Waverley, these sorts of places, they're not, Redfern and the city, they're not, it doesn't appear to have ceased any commercial activities in these areas, but it's not something I have looked at in detail.
Okay, I think that's all. I think we're probably moving on to... is it Richard or Lee? We get the world. Do you have to go? Because I'm.
No, I just thought it might. There's issues that you might need to touch upon, which was reasonably quick.
Right.
I'm sure
okay.
There are a lot more operational issues.
Yeah, there are. Yeah. So we understand the quite strange arrangement.
Indeed.
Can't say I've seen this one before, but...
Indeed. Just for the record, John McEwen, solicitor for the applicant, and thank you to the panel for the opportunity. If I might just start with a couple of things by way of casual observation. I think it's very important for a lot of the objectors who are here tonight and those that aren't, that might find out about all this. This is not an application for a new clinic. This is not an application by a new business entity who has not had any experience in running such a clinic. The applicant has had 24 years' experience in running such a clinic, 400 to 500 metres away from the proposed site. This is not an inexperienced operator we're talking about. This operator has multitudes of regulations and bylaws and permits and the like to comply with, and has complied with them consistently for 24 years. They're not about to change their spots. They will continue to comply with all of those regulatory requirements. They have always taken very, very seriously the social impacts or potential social impacts or perceived social impacts of the operation of such a clinic. They will continue to do so. They are not flouting the regulations. They are not aiming to hoodwink anybody by moving over the hill. They are providing an absolutely fundamental and critical service to this community. And as Colleen pointed out, this has to be taken seriously and into consideration, not just by the panel. I am confident the panel will take this into consideration, but it is just so important that the benefits that flow to this community from such an operation as this, this community ought to be very, very thankful that we have an operator of this capability to do this in our community and provide this invaluable service. I'll get off my soapbox and address a couple of issues for you. But in relation to the social impact issues that have been raised in the objections, it came to my attention when I was looking at the report from council to the panel. On page 3 of that report, background 1.1, it refers to the recent uses, and Member Hobley and Representative Hibbard both mentioned that when I think Colleen or David were here. It refers to recent uses of this exact site. The recent uses in 2013 was a sobering up clinic. Subsequent to that, during the course of that 9 or so months that it operated 12 hours a night, Friday and Saturday night, and it dealt with up to 80 people on each of those occasions. The second aspect to that, which also appears in exactly that same paragraph in the council report, is this, that when the funding was withdrawn for the watershed program from the New South Wales government for the sobering up clinic, there were sufficient funds left for watershed to continue a drug and rehab program out of this very site. And it ran that program for 3.5 years, from September 2014 to the end of January 2018. So those folk in the room that have objection to the potential social impact of a drug and rehab centre, they've already lived with it for 3.5 years, 4 years or more. So if they haven't suffered any of those social impact concerns that they have, and I'm not suggesting for a minute that they don't have that perception, and as often is stated, perception is a reality in the person's mind, but if they haven't actually experienced any of those social impacts, what makes them think that there's going to be such an enormous change from what has been the case for the last 3.5 to 4 years up till the end of January 2018, when some of them would just have been acquiring the property? This existed. A drug and rehabilitation clinic existed in this very location. I'll allow the panel members to draw their own inferences from that, but I think it is very important to follow that. Sorry, in relation to the very specific issues. Sorry, that was also endorsed by the police, by the way. I'm sure you've seen the Local Area Command report, which has in big bold capitals, they have no objection to this proposal. I think if the police had any objectionary concern about moving it over the hill, it would have been flagged up loud and long, and they put up some very sensible recommendations which the applicant is prepared to follow. Now, in relation to the actual access to the site, which is a very, very peculiar circumstance, It will come as no surprise to you that I agree with the advice that was given by Council's legal counsel, that there is in fact no necessity to have railway approval, state rail approval, for or consent to this application. This is a deemed road. This section of land we're talking about is a deemed road under the Act. It is used as a car park and it is run by the council. That means automatically that members of the public have access through that car park because that's what a deemed road is. In any event, I'm fairly positive, I haven't yet seen any words on the documents yet, but I understand council is in the process of having that ratified by State Rail. Now, there's a proposal in the council recommendations that this development, if it is approved, will be subject to certain restrictions as to if the access is no longer available through that present deemed road as a consequence of a cessation of the agreement between Wollongong Council and State Rail, or whatever they are now called, then this development application will cease to exist. The applicant is happy to accept that condition. The other thing that is, and obviously I'll be vetting the terms, wording of the conditions for approval just to make sure that the applicant understands fully the context of that. The other thing that is important too, I think, is there's been mention about the future benefit of this and the visual, sorry, the word's gone straight out of my head, future utilisation of this site as not being an appropriate utilisation for the visualisation of Wollongong moving forward. Let me assure you, this is a pretty prime development site in this city. There is a 3-year lease available to the applicant. There is no option to renew. So the likelihood of this being a long-term arrangement, I would suggest it would be reasonable for the panel to accept that this is not a long-term arrangement. So sadly, or perhaps happily for me, the applicant will have to go through this process again in 2 or 3 years' time.
Yeah. I'd probably stop you. I don't think it... Don't put to us that we look at this as a temporary. I think the comment that we have to look at this as a use that is either appropriate or not for the site...
Oh, absolutely.
Look, I think the panel also understands it's probably an area undergoing transition and that there's, you know, more... There's a range of uses that might occur on a more short-term basis, but... Mm. I think we will look at this as a use, and I think the point is that it's a development consent. It's not being asked. We're not being asked to issue a 3-year consent or a 5-year consent. We're being asked to issue.
Oh, I wasn't. Sorry, yeah. I wasn't suggesting that.
Yeah, so just that. Yeah, that's good.
what I was indicating is that the applicant really won't have a lot of control.
Yeah.
And if this is the visual, the vision for the area, then. Perhaps it needs to be watered down a little. This is not something that's necessarily going to impact on that future vision. The point that Elaine Draglown raised in relation to the potential development for the adjoining block, I think that is a very important issue because this is, a 3-year limited lifespan as far as the lease is concerned. Now, from that perspective, I'm not quite sure there's going to be a new development on the block next door within 3 years. So I'm not sure that that issue that she raises with the Teachers Federation doing what they're going to do is particularly relevant to this determination today.
Just as a devil's advocate, it would be open to an owner for whatever reason to decide to issue a longer term lease if it was requested or if they were of a mind to. There's nothing in this application that would stop that happening should that occur.
So that's why I think, as I said,
I think we just have to be careful in that this isn't being asked for a time-limited consent. So it's a consent, yes, you have restrictions on your leases. That may or may not change and that would be outside of any... It's a commercial arrangement that a council or a consent authority essentially has no influence on.
Indeed, yes. I'm sorry, I was just trying to find if there was something else that you'd mentioned that you'd like some clarification on, but I think that was it.
No, it was mainly just... It was very beneficial to have another legal view of what is... I've been around the planning game for a long time and I actually haven't seen the arrangement that Rail Corp have with the City of Wollongong. City of Wollongong.
But also, I think from your client's perspective, the condition, the cessation of development consent condition is condition 35, and you probably need to have a read of that now. And if there are any issues, probably speak to the client now, because we will be, that's what we're looking at.
Indeed.
In terms of our assessment and determination of the matter.
Well, happy to do that. Thank
right.
you.
Okay. Any questions? Thank you.
Because you raised it, do you know whether the watershed use of the site involved methadone?
Not to my knowledge.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks. Okay, who's Richard or Mark? Mark, good. No, this is Mark Thompson.
Good evening. No, Richard
Garvey. Richard, oh, sorry.
I don't know whether Mark will be talking unless I need to.
Okay, sorry.
Okay, firstly I'd like to thank everybody who attended tonight, even the people who are objecting, because it gives us the opportunity to see what the objections are and work with them, if we're approved, to resolve any problems that there are. And we've worked closely with the community over the past 24 or 5 years to resolve issues as they arose. So we work closely with council, we work closely with the police department, and we also work closely with the Area Health Service. I feel nobody was actually directly saying anything terrible about our patients, but they made inferences. So I think that I have to be here as a representative on their behalf. They are citizens of the Illawarra, and they have the same rights as anybody else. They may be disadvantaged by having a drug and alcohol problem, but they move through the city, they interact with the people who are complaining, they live their lives. I think that you could categorise them as people who are actually trying to do something about their dependence problems, and they deserve a place where they can go, where they're treated with respect and they're treated in a clinically correct manner. Now, my background is I'm a registered nurse. I have a degree in psychology, master in psychology. I have a graduate diploma in drug and alcohol from Macquarie, and I have a master's in mental health nursing from Wollongong. So the experts you were talking about before, I hate to
You're
say
right.
it, but I may be it. So if there's any questions that you have regarding drug and alcohol issues, behavioural issues, I can probably address those for you. And because I actually opened the clinic, I can talk about management issues too. Now, in terms of my background in managing methadone, I started off working as a registered nurse at Liverpool Hospital, the Jacaranda House, back in about 86, I think it was, while I was at uni doing psychology. This isn't about me, but just to give me some background. Then I worked at Rankin Court. I came back and worked as a psychologist at Jacaranda House. Then I commissioned Cooper's Cottage at Campbelltown Hospital. And then, given the opportunity, I opened Scott Street Clinic at Liverpool, and we were getting a lot of patients coming up from Wollongong to Liverpool. So I came down and looked for an area in Wollongong for an appropriate clinic. We opened it up in the early 90s, and we were full within about 6 months. There was a big demand here. And historically, that is because of the nature of the city, the port, access to drugs, lots of money because people were earning a lot of money. But over the time, that situation as far as heroin use has stabilised. So now we're seeing our population of patients age, becoming more responsible. They don't always get off methadone. They're maintained. But for every dollar that you invest in drug and alcohol, you get a $5 return, so they say, in terms of decreased crime, better parenting, decreased policing costs, etc. Now, there was a reference made to the credit union. 25 years ago, the situation was bad. They had a security guard. They found needles and syringes there. I noticed that that actually improved over the 25 years that the clinic's been here.
Is that a similar observation, given that you've been in Denison Street for 25 years? So would you have a similar observation that that's improved?
Yeah. I mean, there's less violent crime. There's less stick-ups. Property crime remains a problem because, you know, people commit property crimes sometimes as a living rather than to support a drug habit. But in terms of actually funding a drug habit, there's far less violent crime, far less risk of being robbed, far less risk of people being stuck up with shotguns in their face. And you would have noticed that actually in news reports. You rarely these days hear about stick-ups. And that is actually, I'd say, a result of the methadone program. Now, not only is it that, but there's also health improvements. We are treating people for hepatitis C, so that's a decreased cost to the community in terms of both transmitting hepatitis C, and we're actually curing people these days. So there's a decreased cost in terms of people going on to cirrhosis of the liver. But I come back again. I've worked with these people for 30 years overall. They are just generally normal people. They, as far as I'm concerned, will not cause problems to the local residents. And in fact, because of the nature of the things that we're putting in place, like the security cameras and security guards, I would imagine that they could actually feel safer walking through there. But, well, they might be safer. Perception-wise, they might feel less safe, but in truth, they are probably safer. And I would also suggest that if our clients saw somebody being accosted as, you know, an average age of 30 to 40-year-olds, they're probably more likely to intervene to help them rather than to be the perpetrators of crime. So I thought I had to say that because our patients don't have a voice here tonight. I'm it. So.
Okay, so questions. The things that have come up are the hours of operation, again, a perception about congregation.
Yep.
And the feeling of safety. And, you know, this panel, we deal with, you know, like the pubs. So what we're looking at from a planning point of view are the mechanisms and the approach that the running of the facility puts in place to deal with the real or perceived issues that may or may not arise. Now, we've got a social impact assessment that said we've observed some congregation. We've got some, you know, I'd like to understand the hours of operation and why they're at the time they are. So just maybe perhaps in terms of the things that are in place, and again, probably by reference to lessons learnt from Denison Street, presumably that evolved over 25 years as well.
In terms of the opening hours, we open at 6 o'clock to cater for workers because we do have a lot of people who work in blue-collar work, tradesmen, etc. So they like to start early, so they get in, get their dose, and go to work. The congregation are normally people who aren't working, who try to get in early to get their dose for whatever reason. Now, one of the conditions that council's put on the DA is that we have a security guard there, and also we limit access to the clinic between 6 and 7 to those people who are going to work. So they want to get in, get the dose and go. If we put that in place, I would imagine that there will be little or no congregation between those hours. It can also be a function of dosing. Now, when a person comes into a methadone program, firstly they're assessed to see if they're suitable, if they have an opiate dependence. Then they're commenced on a methadone dose, and they're dosed daily for the first 3 months minimum to make sure that they're stable. After that, they're eligible to get takeaway doses, which increases on a yearly basis, stability basis. So they can get a maximum of 4. That's if they're on methadone. Subutex, you can get more. So basically, a patient will attend to get his dose, get his takeaways, go home, or they will have to attend to get their dose and see the prescriber, which may hold them up a little bit. But generally what we try and do is we try and get them out the ones who are being dosed, we dose them as quickly as we can, and we can dose 60 in an hour. You know, that's how efficient we are at doing that. So in terms of congregation, we'll have the security guard there from 5:30 to make sure there's minimal noise impact prior to opening. And he will dissuade anybody who shouldn't be there at that time from being there, come back at 7. He will also maintain control of the local area. So we won't just be limited to the clinic. If there's any perceived problems in the vicinity, he can also deal with those issues. He'll have a fairly broad approach to, you know, what he does in terms of security. He will also monitor interactions between anybody who's using the train station or accessing the train station at that stage. So basically what I'm saying to you is we will operationally minimise any of the problems and we'll work with the community if there are any perceived or noticed problems, real or otherwise, to address those issues. Because we're part of the community. You know, we've been there for 25 years. Our clients access the train station, the ones who come by train. They'll probably just have to walk over the bridge if they're coming from the south. If they're coming from the north, they'll get off that sidewalk straight across. And it'll be the same as the ones who are coming to the clinic now. The ones who are driving, obviously, that will be an impact on the local roads, but we have sufficient parking there, I think, for people to get in, get their dose and go. So did that answer that query?
Yes, I think so. But I suppose...
I don't think it's sufficient
for
you to just tell us that in this forum.
Okay.
I think what's necessary is that what you say you are going to do is recorded in a plan of management, a document that says this is what we're going to do, this is what our security guard will do,
yep.
You've just told us he will do, this is what we will advise and instruct our patrons, customers, whatever you call them, to do.
Yep.
as well, the document would have a complaints mechanism, a point of contact in the centre, where any person with a grievance could register that grievance, and there would be a record of that and a record of how you responded to that.
Yep. Look, we're happy to do that, Steve, if that's a requirement. And I think that would actually be good in terms of working with the local community. So
it's a way to work with the community, which you said you're going to do.
Yeah.
It's a way of keeping a record of what really happens and what really concerns people.
Yep.
And it's commonplace for pubs and for a lot of uses like that. But I don't see why it doesn't apply, even though you're not operating at late hours. But it is a way of reassuring the public about what the expectation should be about the operation of the premises and that you will respond if they have a concern.
I think one of the problems is that people have a misunderstanding of methadone patients and they perceive that they will be intoxicated.
Mm.
Whereas, the opposite's actually true. It's not like a pub where you go in and you drink and you come out and you cause problems. Here they take the drug in order to be stable, to operate normally and to get on with their lives. So they don't go in there and come out intoxicated. It doesn't happen like that and they don't cause problems in the local area. It's also taken orally. So the references to, the needles and syringes that have been found there, they are probably not related to our patients. They're probably more related to the current other drug problems that we have. I can't say that with 100% certainty, obviously, but...
Well, it may be that the plant could also deal with, surveillance of the curtilage of the place to see that that sort of thing's not happening.
Well, we do...
Whether by you or otherwise.
We do that routinely anyway. We walk around to make sure that there's not...
I think that ought to be said, and it ought to be a condition of consent that document is to be observed.
I'm quite happy to do that as a condition of consent. That doesn't cause them any problems at all. Mm. Because, as I said, we're part of the community.
Yeah.
We don't want to cause problems to the local residents. And we'd like to work with them where possible. Because 12% of people report illicit drug use in the last 12 months in the recent household drug use survey. 12.5%, actually. So there's a lot of drug use in the community. I'm not just talking about heroin. Obviously, heroin's a very small part of it. But we want to be good citizens. We want our patients to actually interact well with the local people, not to cause problems. We already have a community contract with our patients, as well as a government rules and rights and responsibilities that they sign when they come into treatment. So we do that already. It's just not formalised, and we can do that without...
Yes, maybe it's just, in part, a matter of formalising what you already do and making it publicly available that this is what's going to happen.
Yeah, well, we could have given you a copy of our actual operating manual. However, there's stuff in there like
that's
security...
That's be
private
stuff.
It needs to be accessible to the
yeah,
public.
Yeah, I know. So we'll take that out of there and make it into a document.
The key things in terms of the concerns that we've been hearing tonight is the management of the behaviour.
Yeah, yeah.
If there is, you know, if that does happen and your social impact says, you know, it's not a lot, but it happens. I suppose from my question on Denison Street, do you still have a security guard on Denison Street?
No, it's really not necessary.
No, and that was my question. You have had one originally, presumably, or and... Your practices have...
We manage the patients. We manage them inside the clinic and we manage them outside the clinic. It's only... The problem with congregation at the front is generally before we open. And that was the purpose for having a security guard there, to make sure that the patients who were congregating initially, this is at Denison Street, didn't cause any problems to the local residents. But we found... that we could all manage that. We actually got workers in at 6 and we made people who weren't workers stay away until 6:30 or 7 o'clock. And that limited a lot of that problems. We still get them there and we have to encourage them to leave. Some people are quite persistent. But we just managed that, you know. Mark is the clinic manager.
We met Mark on site today.
Yeah, and we work... We know our patients, we work closely with our patients, and if we ask them to do something, generally they will do it.
All right. Other questions?
I have a couple.
Yep.
So this issue of the Department of Health guidelines, I bet you're aware of them.
Oh, yeah, I'm aware. Yeah. I am actually aware of that document, and I know where it originated. It originated when I was opening Cooper's Cottage at Campbelltown.
Right.
And it was a staff... They were going to put... the methadone clinic right beside the childcare centre. Ridiculous.
Right, okay. So has it been upgraded?
Look, not as far as I'm aware. The guidelines were not within 100 metres of childcare centres or places where people congregate, which are churches. You know, they didn't want Sunday services to be interrupted by methadone patients. It wasn't.
It's like sex service premises.
Yeah. I mean, it was never intended to exclude from residential areas, because if you look at the clinics that exist, as Colleen said, most of them are in residential areas. Barbara Street Clinic at Fairfield is in a suburb. It's in a house in a suburb. Same with Auburn Clinics.
I used to live opposite one on Prospect Road in Summerhill.
Oh, yes, Summerhill, yes. And also the railway station. There's one at Central Railway Station.
Anyhow, there were some issues raised by the local businesses and the trade union, and the fact that the teachers' fed is going to has purchased one Loudon and proposes to occupy it, and that they envisage that they're going to have real problems. Can you think of a way in which you can interact with the various commercial and business members of the local community to actually help them understand the sorts of problems they may or may not have and how you can help resolve them with them? But we've just heard one businessman say, we'll go out of business. We've heard someone else report that the teachers' union have said they won't occupy the building. So it's a real... I'm concerned about the interaction with that, not concerns that will happen in the future.
Can I just address that? I'm more than happy to go and talk to people about methadone and patients, heroin users, or any range of drugs that they're interested in. I would point out that we're only a small percentage of the drug use problem in Wollongong, a very small percent. The major problem is alcohol. In terms of health, it's cigarettes. The major drug of dependence or addiction, illicit substance that people use, is cannabis. Amphetamines has supplanted heroin as the fourth most. It's gone from heroin's gone from third to fourth, and amphetamines has supplanted it in that spot.
That, sorry to interrupt, because that's not what you're doing is telling me what you might say.
Yeah,
what
I'm wanting coming back to the question, though.
Yeah, okay.
So I'm happy to provide anybody with information regarding how to deal with patients, what to look for, education to any of those people. And I'm also happy to work with them. For example,
I think you're going to have to reach out to these local businesses in advance if perchance it gets approved, because you've got really serious concerns raised.
We had a meeting with the people from the hydrographic office when they raised their initial complaint. We had a sit down with them. We told them what strategies we'd put in place to minimise any impact on the business. We, I think Arthur, or Mr. Roris, sent a copy of his letter to Judith Stubbs and co. And I did try to reach out to Arthur. I rang him, but I couldn't get in contact with him. And I think Mark also sent him an email. In terms of the coffee shop going out of business, he actually doesn't even have access through the back of his property. It's not in his DA. He has no access at all. So his own access is through Auburn Street. And I don't think that our patients are going to go around and harass him there. They may go and buy coffee, and it may improve his business. Now, I'm not trying to negate the real fears that I have, and I'm happy to work with these people. But some of the things that they say...
The point I'm trying to make is I suggest you come up with some plan, like holding an open day or something, and invite, call them up and say, I'd really like to meet with you and talk with it. That's the sort of thing I'm looking at,
I'm
so that you can
then
have the your social.
Okay. I think we just got to get kind of, we're dealing with the development application and the criteria that we need to. So I do want to understand, have we dealt with the issues that have been raised tonight to enable us to fully understand where both residents are coming from and what the applicant is seeking to achieve. We understand you have been in the area in Denison Street for a long period of time, mm-hmm. and that this isn't another facility, it's replacing that one. I just noticed that I'm conscious of the time, and have we got any other burning questions? So did you have some closing statements that you wish to make?
Well, apart from thanking you for the opportunity to put my patient's point of view to you, I just raised two things that came up. The sobering up centre operated Friday and Saturday night, correct. But during the other hours through the week, Watershed operated a drug and alcohol treatment place there. They didn't dispense methadone, but they did actually see methadone patients for additional counselling. And they operated, I think it was must have been 7 days a week, actually. I'm not 100% sure, but they operated through the week as well. There was another issue, and it's totally lost.
I think we've probably got the gist of everything. Yeah. I think last on call and quits.
Final question,
hurry up.
What is the... Where's the room to move at the hours of operation?
Ah.
You rusted on to 6 a.m. or...
I'm not rusted onto it, but it would disadvantage the patients who work if we were to open later. Well, what I can guarantee is that we will only have working patients there who aren't going to be kicking up a fuss.
Do you know what the numbers are like?
I think all that's in the documentation we provided.
All the patients or the ones that
just the working numbers?
Probably about 15 at the most in the morning.
Mm. Every day?
No, not every day.
Because there's
again,
the takeaway.
It comes back to takeaways, yeah. And, people talk about 300 patients, but it's never 300 patients a day. It's far less than that.
Yep.
What about Saturdays? What about Saturdays, Sundays and public holidays?
We could adjust those hours, yeah.
Well, what do you...
Well, currently it's 7 to 11.
Mm.
It depends.
Is there any health reason it needs to be 7 a.m.?
Well, it's only because of the consistency between dosing through the week.
Yeah.
So if you've got somebody coming in 7 days for their dose when they're initially stabilising, that extra hour probably won't make a difference apart from psychologically.
Yeah.
Physiologically, no, because methadone lasts from 24 to 36 hours. So No, I can adjust those hours on the weekend if necessary, in order to improve amenity for the people in those buildings, if it's required.
Yeah, okay.
Well,
you know,
are they, the Denison Street hours are currently similar?
They're the same.
Yeah.
We didn't vary the hours because basically, as I say, the working people, and the weekends, it's just, you know, continuation of treatment, really.
We're going to make a decision.
So I'm happy to do, as Steve suggested, with the, you know, the contract, basically, and the information.
Plan of management. Which would form a, which would be subject to a condition of consent, so it's part of the approval.
Happy to do that.
It's something that would be reviewed and varied in response to to complaints.
Okay, I think we're clear on...
We will work with the local community to solve any problems that arise.
All right. Well, I think we've heard everything we need to hear to help us kind of form a view as to whether the development application is reasonable or not, and the parameters in terms of how that should operate and the types of things that it needs to deal with. So thank you for your presentations. It's been very useful for us to understand the issues. Thank you for everybody's patience and the way that they've actually managed to help us understand the residents' issues as well. So with that, I'm going to close the meeting. And as I said at the beginning of the meeting, what we do now is deliberate and make a decision on this matter, and that decision will be available on the website within 2 or 3 days. So again, thank you very much for your time. Close the meeting.